This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. How was your wait? It's here. Another game. The Jets are in Pittsburgh to take on the Penguins. Three games in four nights starts this evening. Columbus tomorrow, back home on Sunday night to host the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll be delving into this game, and of course, the latest with the roster with the Winnipeg Jets. Nick Petan is down, Matt Hendricks is activated. We'll get into the lines and some new looks on the power play, too, after three straight days of practice for the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers continue preparations for their final regular season home battle at IGF this Saturday versus the BC Lions, and they are banged up. We'll delve into that, some of the injuries, and more about the league as well. The World Series is even, Steven! What was happening last night? Bomb after bomb, eight home runs in a World Series game set a record last night between the Astros and the Dodgers. We'll talk about that. Two chances to qualify for your hockey nights in Vegas. Jesse Marshall is going to talk Penguins with us. Brian Munns in Pittsburgh live going to talk Jets with us. Jamie McLennan, the goaltender guru and just a fine all-around broadcaster. And Jeff Reinbold will delve into some NFL with us as well as it continues tonight. Baltimore hosting Miami. Hour of your phone calls as well. Jim Tilth, Troy Weston, Brandon Rewicki, gentlemen. How are we today?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty well.
Snowing.
Watching some hockey last night. Well, I had lots of fun with the baseball for sure. It was real cool. Everything that happened, even the opening ceremony part of it, right? It was neat as all heck. And then watching the game, you know, it goes a little bit late and watching it and trying to fit in a shower somewhere. And after the Astros go up by two at the top of the 10th, I'm like, okay, I can go shower. It's over. And I go shower, come on, it's tied. Holy smacker, I gave up a little bit of hope on the Dodgers that I was kind of cheering for. So it's just, boy, that sure is a beautiful park to watch. It's just, there's a real, the ambiance there is wonderful. And I just so much love playoff baseball. It's shaping up to be a beauty of a series.
Yeah, I made the same mistake. Once the Astros went up by two, they're done. There's no way the Dodgers, after Kenley Jansen gives up the save and all this sort of thing, that they can come back to win. So I turned it off and then had to scramble immediately to get back down after the Dodgers somehow tied it up. But, yeah, it was a pretty decent night. But it's – look, boys, the long wait is finally over. We get a beauty tonight. Dolphins-Ravens. This is what sports is all about.
No. The Astros-Dodgers don't play again until Friday. So there's nothing to watch tonight. Dolphins, Ravens.
The Thursday night streak is officially over. Before the game's even started, it's officially over.
That's some ugly right there.
Maybe
yeah.
It'll be 45-43. Who knows? You never know. Let's delve into this with the Jets and the Penguins. And before we do, yes, the Vin Scully stuff. I've said this before in this show. Growing up in Alberta, you get the Dodgers games at night. And from when I was in high school through college through even my career, just – you're going to go to bed and you turn on a little Dodgers and it's like slap shot. You'll watch 5 minutes and all of a sudden 2 hours go by, and just listening to Vin Scully, seeing him out there was absolutely outstanding. Both nights with Satchel Paige and Jackie Robinson's widow in game one, and then, of course, the Vin Scully last night. Well done on the Dodgers organization. The Winnipeg Jets made a roster move yesterday. We've been discussing it all week. As people get healthy, there's not enough room. They sent Nick Petan to the Manitoba Moose, and they activate Matt Hendricks off the injured reserve list. Your thoughts?
Well, it didn't surprise me, or I doubt it surprised us. We talked about how that was the move to make if you don't want to risk losing an asset. So they do it, and now Nick Petan could go get his 20 minutes in and hopefully be very, very productive down with the Moose. But it is scary looking at that bottom six, and I thought maybe Tanev caught Matthias as a third line was a joke, but it looks like that's going to be cemented in as the Jets' third line. And then when you take into consideration, if you want a, just a real solid understanding as to the challenge tonight. Think about what the Winnipeg Jets have for a third line. And remember, the third line for the Pittsburgh Penguins is Carl Hagelin, Riley Sheehan, and Patrick Hornquist. And just compare the two, and it adds up to a whole bunch of trouble here, in my opinion. I just don't like the way the bottom six is being managed here. I'm trying to come to an understanding all day yesterday in conversation and just contemplation, trying to think about what is it that Paul Maurice is trying to accomplish here. Does he feel like there's so little as far as trying to piece something together that bottom six that he's just all in on that top six, and you hope you're able to create a 2-3 goal differential sort of thing with that top six and sort of survive the bottom six? It's remarkable, and it is under a microscope, I think, not just in this market, but from people. Like, people are writing about this all over the place and have interest in his approach and what he's doing. So we'll see how it works out here. Over the next we had a back-to-back situation tonight and tomorrow against two very good teams, and we'll see how this all works out.
You know, how long ago was it that we started looking at the way forward lines were deployed and said, this is no longer a top six, bottom six thing. This is a top nine.
It was two or three years ago.
So the Jets are 2 or 3 years behind. It's that simple. They're throwing out an archaic lineup every single night that they try and outscore teams with their top six. And it's a very interesting strategy against a Pittsburgh team that in their top six has two of the three, four, five best forwards in the game that they're able to, like, the Jets have some impressive talent in their top six, but they don't really have a Crosby Malkin that they can throw out there. So, you know, like, it's a strategy that can work against some teams. Pittsburgh, I have my doubts about that, but the Patan thing, I don't know. Like, he hasn't gotten a ton of ice time, but he hasn't really produced either. Like,
he actually hasn't had a shot on net yet, even.
Like, it's kind of a double-edged sword for me. Like, I know he's not getting a lot of ice time and chances, but at the same time, you got to pop off the page a little bit here. Like, you got to give the coach some reason to look at you and say, yeah, you know what, I can maybe give you some time on the third line, or I can give you some time somewhere in the top six, something like that, and it's just not there for him. So I guess the hope is he goes to the Moose, and in his first year with the Moose, he had, I think, 32 points in 47 games, which is, that's pretty solid, you know, coming out of junior for the first time in pro hockey. Hopefully he gives you a point a game down there, and he gives you no choice but to have him called back up into the lineup, and then he earns his playing time at that point. But I understand people's angst with him going down, but at the same time, I don't think you can look at what he's done in the NHL so far this season and say, yeah, that guy deserves a spot somewhere in that lineup, no question about it.
The only counter to that is when you look at who's in the lineup. Like, I agree completely with what you're saying, and I don't have a huge problem with them going down. But when you compare the production and the jump off the ice of the guys who are in a third-line role right now for the Jets, it's like, well, they haven't done anything either. So, you know, if you had Armia and Patan on that third line with Kopp in the middle of them, does that give you a better chance than Tanev and Mathias together? A lot of people think so.
To me, it's still about development. And Nick Patan is not developing at where he should be. And that is a compliment to Nick Patan, because Nick Patan has all the talent in the world. I don't give up on him. I don't think we've seen the last of him this season with the Winnipeg Jets. But I'm with you guys. He has done nothing to stand out and sort of say, I have to have him in this lineup. Even in a fourth line role, even at 6 minutes a night. He's got 13 points in 60 games. As you said, he hasn't had a shot on net yet this season.
No, not him, Dano.
Or Dano. But Patan, in 60 games, has one goal, and that goal was last November. And that includes top power play minutes this season in one game, and who he plays with. And when I mean that as a compliment, it is, look, is he more talented than Tanev, Mathias, even Kopp, Lemieux, maybe even Armia? Yes, he is. But have you seen that? And I take a lot of stuff on Twitter about Kyle Connor coming up, 2 points in two games, and all of a sudden, but yeah, 2 weeks ago when the season started, he wasn't ready. No, he wasn't.
I'll disagree there.
You do? Because I didn't see anything in camp that told me he was ready. What I saw in his first period back up here is what I saw from him in camp, and then he got better. And I think we get caught up a lot of the times in, they got to be on the team, they got to play this time. There's just not enough minutes. You want these guys to play more than Matt Hendricks, who hasn't played yet, or Tanev or Mathias. I get that. The Tanev thing, I'm really starting to question. But we'll hear from Paul Maurice on that and everything else. But to me, there's more to Patan's game than there is Tanev, and he's not giving it right now. So as a coach or as an organization, when you sit down, what do you concern yourself more with? A guy who is what he is and he's just doing what he does, or a guy who has a very high ceiling and he's just not showing it yet? To me, I think Nick Patan could use 20 minutes a night, number one power play time, rack up some points, and I think we'll see him again. I don't think he's down there for the year. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but
not really. I don't care if he comes up a little bit later on in the year. It just is hard when you're talking about trying to maximize what can be accomplished on the ice by your third line, and specifically with the players available to you right now. And Nick Patan, one goal in 60 games, sure, but ultimately he's got 0.22 points per game in his brief 3 years of getting time with the big club. And compare that to Tanev's 0.08 points per game, and they have similar Corsi numbers. And I know that Tanev, with the speed demon and the way he skates, there's more possibility, or Paul Maurice at least likes the potential of him to be an effective defensive player. But I refuse to believe Tanev caught Mathias gives you more than a possible Patan cop Armia, for instance, as your third line.
Or really any other combination of wingers that the Jets can throw out there right now that are with the team. I think Nick Patan needs to go down to the AHL and dominate there because he hasn't done it before. I'm sorry, like he hasn't. 32 points in 47 games is good. His following season, 5 points in 9 games. That's all right. Like he's never gone down into the A and been a point of game player there. So like there is, I like his game, but there is some question as to whether he can produce at the professional level. Like I do think the Jets need to find that out, and Nick Patan needs to find that out. But to me, that's a separate issue from the third line that the Jets are currently using right now, where it's just a complete ignorance of putting skill in there and giving you a chance to score.
I think it's two different topics. I really do. I think that I hearken back to Paul Maurice's comments yesterday where he was asked what he wants to see out of the bottom six, and he said the usual speed, grit, defensive play, penalty kill, and he slipped in, and feel free to score a goal anytime. And that's not just for Patan, and it's not just for, you know, it's for everybody there. It's for the 9 guys that we talked about, and I throw Adam Lowry in there, that are trying to figure out what they do with this lineup. I think it's a different discussion than, like, the cop Tan of Mathias. So that's why I say I think it's good for Nick Patan. I think Nick Patan, I don't know if he was rushed to the NHL. I think he was put there because they needed something, and if that maybe, I would love to see a Nick Patan after a full season with no NHL time in the American Hockey League, and then maybe start another season there and let him develop and get to this. Because, quite honestly, I see junior hockey moves in his game even this season. You have a partial breakaway and do a turnaround backspin and don't even get a shot on net. There, I could go on, but when I do that, I hear the fever of Nick Patan's a better hockey player than the guys on this team. I understand that. I believe in Nick Patan. I think he's got a potential to put up points in the National Hockey League.
But shouldn't Paul Maurice be putting the best players available to him in the third line role and go and get goals? Like, who's available for your third line? How do you maximize the talent out there? Is Paul Maurice doing that? And even if that's putting Nick Patan in there, when ultimately what would best serve him individually would be to go and spend a year down with the Moose and put up some numbers and all the rest of it, are you doing the Winnipeg Jets? Are you making the best move for the Winnipeg Jets in sending him down and having a guy like Tanev and Mathias together on the third line?
Well, to me, that's the debate. Like, can you still develop this kid, who's clearly not, or he'd be putting up some points, I mean, we go on and on about it, but Tanev has a point.
Jim, he's got 0.08 points per game.
Don't give me the points per game, Troy, because to me, he hasn't had a point in... And I know you love that point per game stuff, but if you go 20 games without a point, you're not helping when you're supposed to be putting up points.
Dude, I watched him last game down low in a battle with, I believe it was Matthias and... Who was his winger last game?
So how long do you keep running him out there then?
He was down low battling with Lemieux and Matthias down low behind like below the goal line. And I was just like, that looks so wrong. He's down there trying to like cycling the puck down low, just trying to keep the puck in the O-zone and seeing who he's out there with on the ice.
Who are we talking about? Patan?
Patan out there with Lemieux and Matthias. Like you just
well, there's not enough talent though to play these guys with these guys.
Take Kyle Connor off the top six. You put Kopp and Armia out there with them. That at least gives them a chance. You have very little chance or maybe no chance with Tanev, Kopp and Matthias. That's the argument. That's what people are saying. Yeah, in theory, you understand Nick Patan going down on the moose and bringing his game along. But during that time, what are you putting on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets to give the Jets the best chance to win? Is this the best chance to win?
Brendan Lemieux, in 9 minutes of ice time, just took his job. Brendan Lemieux is still on this team, and he's taken his job on the fourth line. And Nick Patan should score more points than Brendan Lemieux. But Brendan Lemieux is going to do a better job at what you just talked about, the cycling down low, the physicality, all that stuff. Like, if you're a point getter, you have to get points. If you're a grinder and a cycler and an agitator like Lemieux, that's what you have to do. Lemieux did his job in 9 minutes and took Nick Patan's place.
I just don't agree with what you're saying. You don't
– Okay.
Paul Maurice isn't in a situation where he has to put some, whatever you're talking about, like the old school grinding – third line out there. When you have the possibility of putting Patan, Kopp, and Armia out there, that is best maximizing what you've got available to you to have a productive third line.
We'll take a break and continue the conversation on the Jets and lineup and the Pens when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Penguins tonight. The afternoon ride starts at 3. They'll go till 5 because it's an early start tonight. Kevin Olszewski and friends have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock is Puck Drop live from Pittsburgh. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns on the call. And then the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open as well on the postgame show. It will be open today at 9. I know a lot of you want to weigh in on the discussion. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, broadcasting from the Royal Sports Studio. And let's hear from head coach Paul Maurice on why Nick Patan was sent down.
We got probably four or five guys there that haven't really distinguished themselves in any real part of their game. The easiest answer is Nicky's waiverable, and we can keep our players. So Lemieux, I liked his game. I like what he brought. I'm interested in seeing, especially in the next two, him being able to do that, getting on the forecheck, real good speed through the neutral zone, and Nick will go down and get some bigger minutes and keep his game going.
So your thoughts on that and the reasoning?
Yeah, that's exactly what we said yesterday, right? Where we understood that that's how you manage and maintain your assets. For sure, no question about it. I'll bounce over to the penalty kill here, where Matt Hendricks, as we've heard about it basically since the arrival, we've heard Paul Maurice gush about Matt Hendricks on most occasions that he's had to be able to talk about him. And now to see, you wonder who he gets paired with out there on the penalty kill, but a huge test tonight in a Pittsburgh, obviously with Pittsburgh as a power play. They're second or third best in the NHL right now.
Let's get into the power plays as well, because yesterday at practice, it was Connor Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine Bufflin, and then Ehlers, Little, Lemieux, Morrissey, Myers. Brendan Lemieux gets some power play time tonight on the second unit, it looks like.
It just, that right there makes me that much more angry right now about Ehlers being on the second power play, is all that did for me. It's just... Until he is moved up, and I'm going to assume that at some point in time he will get moved up to the top line, and whatever you do with those guys right now that you've got, but I just I hope the first team power play is really successful and I'm going to keep screaming from the rooftops that it's ridiculous Ehlers isn't on the first team.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to me either. I think you should load up the top power play unit anyways, but it looks to me at least like the Jets want Ehlers to have his own, to kind of be the man on his own power play unit. I don't really agree with it, but it's something the Jets have been doing basically since Ehlers has come onto the team, where he's just been on the second power play unit and he's just unable to crack the top four forwards that get onto the first one.
So you guys take Connor off the top one then and put Ehlers
yes.
in? Yeah. All right, we'll get your thoughts on the lineup and the power play as well at 9 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Much more to come on the Jets and the Penguins throughout the show today with the Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Jets and Penguins on TSN 1290 at 6 o'clock tonight. Up next, though, we'll delve into the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as they continue preparations. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day, Jets and Penguins on TSN 1290 tonight at 6 p.m. The afternoon ride with Rick and Hustler for 2 hours today from 3 till 5. Then Kevin Olszewski has your Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. He'll have the Huron Windows postgame show after the final whistle as well. This is the Big Show with Jim Tult, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, much more on the Jets and the Penguins coming up in the Royal Sports Power Hour. Let's talk some Blue Bombers, gentlemen, and we'll start with head coach Mike O'Shea's comments on the injuries. Travis Bond, Jamarcus Hardwick were both non-participants at practice yesterday. Neufeld and Fichetti in at left guard and right tackle. And nothing new on the development of Randall Miller-Briggs. He was asked yesterday about all of that, including Mr. Flanders. Who's in, who's out, who's banged up?
All hopeful. None of them practiced today, but once again, I don't know that those guys a lot of reps to be ready for a game, so we'll just wait until the last possible last-ditch second to figure out whether they can go or not.
And historically, as Darren Baumann was reporting with us yesterday, that he's going to do this until the game time, we won't really know, but this is a lot of injuries, especially on the O-line. Like, those are two key components to that O-line for this weekend.
Super key. And I suppose, I mean, they're still a little bit precarious, right? The Bombers haven't secured that home playoff game. And up to this point in time, the Bombers' O-line has been a unit that hasn't suffered any injury. And they just had tremendous good fortune with it. You wonder the severity involved here with both Bond and Hardwick. Maybe Bond to be a little bit more concerned of, but maybe not. I suppose ultimately you just hope that maybe this is like a week sit down and come back. We do know that Fichetti fills in pretty well. The thing is that they have solid backups here, where Fichetti and Neufeld both can fill in and play pretty well. Now you're looking at a Bomber team where there's not a whole lot, like their depth now is being tested on that O line. So you got to knock on a whole bunch of wood here and pray to the football gods that's it, right? There's really no, like, that's the one part of the team that can't suffer anything further when it comes up to the playoff time. So the Bombers have been really fortunate with injuries up to this point in time. They've had a rash of them as of late, but let's just all join hands here and pray to the football gods that's it for now, and they can sort of hold and maintain things here until the playoffs get here.
Yeah, and I know Travis Bond is just a guard, but I would say and argue that he might be the best offensive lineman in the CFL. And I don't know how much longer he's going to be in the CFL as well, because he's just a manimal down in the trenches. And I worry about that injury maybe the most. Just because you wonder if the running game, which the Bombers will desperately need with their offense, is gonna suffer to the point of, you know, basically being incompetent. But the Bombers seem really high on Manasi Fichetti. I mean, Mike O'Shea has a clip here where he goes
strong.
On and on about Fichetti's play, and he showed pretty good in a couple of games that he got into last year. So it is a completely different scenario. Like, we talk all the time about the Bombers just being a different organization from a few years ago. You know, 3 years ago, if the Bombers lost two offensive linemen, it is complete chaos.
Yep.
And Matt Nichols would basically be in a body bag after the first half. So that is kind of the one silver lining in this, is that the Bombers, there are some injuries on the O-line for the first time, but there's some talent, at least, to kind of go in and fill the gaps for a bit.
Let's hear head coach Mike O'Shea talking about Fichetti, and really Pat Neufeld, too, who's very athletic for an O-lineman and filling in. But here's head coach Mike O'Shea on Fichetti.
Well, I know we really like him. We liked him, you know, for... We had him in a mini camp in Florida, I think my first year, and then he must have got signed to an NFL deal, and then we end up getting him back, you know, a couple years later. But we really like him. He's very athletic. He is extremely quiet. He's certainly less quiet in the room, you know, in his room where he's got a lot of comfort with those guys. And then when he gets on the field, it just changes a little bit, and he gets... He's on, and he knows that he is, you know, going to fight on every play, you know, not physically fist fight, but fight on every play to win his job. And he's able to sort of flick that switch and play with a real edge. So there's a lot to like about Manasseh. Obviously, we kept him on the roster the entire year.
Not fight. He's like good. Fist fight.
I'm not sure why he felt the distinction necessary to make that distinction.
I love that.
But he's good, right? Like, and he's big, 6'5", 338, and he's good. When he's stepped in before, Pat Neufeld's good as well. A little bit of concern, and you just hope that with Pat Neufeld in the past, there's been some injury concerns. Another big boy, 6'6", 317. All these guys are so darn big. But you just... this is really testing now the Bombers' depth in a position like Wicks was saying there a couple years ago. It just wasn't there. Right now you're tapping into like Kucher will be the sixth guy probably in this situation, and we'll have to fill and roll. But it's really testing now that Bomber depth on the O-line, and you need to get lucky now. Right, going into the playoffs, you're too many key places with Leggett and Adams, and now a couple of studs like Bond and Hardwick. In the last couple of weeks, it's trending in the wrong direction with injuries, and boy oh boy, it's such a part of the luck as things set up for playoff season here when you could come into these weeks to be healthy. It's just a huge element of eventually winning in these upcoming weeks.
Yeah, O'Shea talked about Neufeld as well after that, but the more the injuries start to pile up, to me, the more desperate this game kind of becomes for the team. And, you know, we talked about how long do you play Nichols and Harris and guys like that if the Bombers clinch against BC and you have that final game against Calgary. I'm starting to lean towards you don't play them at all because these things are starting to pile up like crazy now, and it's almost becoming... Health is the number one priority over game reps and staying fresh and things like that. So the Bombers desperately need this win, and they need it bad. And they need to kind of have it in the bag going into the fourth quarter. How realistic is that? It might not be as much as you would have hoped a couple of weeks ago, but they need to – that's kind of becoming priority number one here, is just making sure you got everybody healthy here. Because, you know, guys like Bond and Flanders, real big pieces of – You know, in that case, the offense, you need to make sure they're 110% or as close as you can get to that by the time the home playoff game comes around.
We'll hear from Coach O'Shea momentarily on Pat Neufeld, but that's an interesting point because, like, they need this win this weekend. They need to go out and get it, and they need to plug these holes and get that home playoff date. But then it's the old, what do? Like, going into Calgary, like say Bond and Hardwick are ready for the playoff game. They're ready for next week in Calgary. But they're still a little banged up. Like, do you put them in? Do you not? Do you get them? Do they go 3 weeks without playing before you put them into that game in that playoff date at home, I should say, after the Calgary game, if they should do so? Like, there's some real interesting questions on how to handle this. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on Pat Neufeld. He'll be coming in, looks like, potentially this weekend as well.
You know, I've been thinking about this over and over. You know, he's all in.
Is that rare? I mean, it seems like all guys should be all in. What's all in mean for Patrick Neufeld?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think he was given the role that he would have liked from the start, but that didn't change the way he prepared, the way he helped his teammates, the way he worked in practice. He's, you know, he didn't accept his role. He embraced it. And I mean, he really is all in, you know, and... Yeah, I can say that about a lot of guys, but it's just very pleasing that it's just good to have Patty here.
I understand what he means by that when he's saying, like, when Pat Neufeld for sure sees himself as a starter in the CFL, and then when you're not able to crack that starting line and the opportunity comes up for you to step in now, there is an added fire and fury going on with Pat Neufeld. That I guarantee you. He's a guy that plays on the edge. He's snarly as the Dickens. And just don't be surprised if after the whistles you see a little bit of pushing and shoving with one Mr. Pat Neufeld. He's a lot of fun to watch out there.
And realistically, if he avoided the injury bug over the first couple of seasons with the Bombers, he'd be a starting lineman right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a matter of talent that he's, you know, on the outside looking in. So that's, you know, big props to the Bombers for being able to find a way to maneuver him and keep him on the roster, and I guess keep him motivated too, because it's, yeah, that's as far as backup offensive linemen go, maybe outside of Calgary, that's about as impactful as you get across the league.
Well, but, and as you pointed out yesterday, it really speaks to the transformation of that position alone with what the organization has done. I don't want to say in a short time, but it in a relatively small couple seasons from where it was.
Night and day, man. It was smoldering ash on the ground, destroyed, right? Not very long ago. Now it's truly one of the strengths, if not the strength of the team.
You think Drew Willey's somewhere going, are you kidding me? Like, really? This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Tolt, Trey Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, broadcasting live from the Royal Sports Studios here at TSN 1290. So let's get into the game itself and who BC's coming with and what you sort of expect. We'll delve in and get predictions and all that tomorrow, but just what are you expecting from the BC Lions? The second time these teams will see each other in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was really surprised at to the degree that the BC Lions defensively were able to control the Bombers. And that whole game, really, to the degree that it was a defensive battle between the two teams was really quite remarkable. The Bombers ended up pulling that one out 26-20, and BC charged late in the game, getting a bunch of their yards later on in the game. But Jonathan Jennings came in hot. He had thrown for over 300 yards in the two games leading up to it, and the Bombers' defense was able to sort of flex in a one of those weeks where it seems to be week on, week off, along the lines of your Karate Kid sort of teachings, where the Bombers...
Week on, week off, I like that.
The defense shows up, and then it's question mark. So here's a situation where the Bomber defense desperately looking for some level of traction after being humiliated last week. Can they come in and make some noise here against Jonathan Jennings, who's been up and down? But this BC team still playing pretty tough here. The last couple of years, there's been sort of this quiet rivalry going on between these two teams here, and expect it to be, like Wicks is saying, that he hopes it's put away going into the fourth quarter. I don't think that's very likely. These two teams typically play some real tough, tight games.
We'll talk more Bombers throughout the program as well, more football, and a lot to come on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Penguins on TSN 1290 tonight at 6. Up next, we'll get into the World Series on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on The Big Show, TSN 1290, on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Penguins tonight at 6. Much more on that starting at the top of the hour of the Royal Sports Power Hour as well. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. But let's talk World Series. Last night, it was an epic one. And regardless of the teams, this is what I expected from this series, to have a game like this. It went to extra innings. I didn't know it would be in this fashion. 8 home runs in the game itself. And really, the way these teams went back and forth, especially in extra innings, with not 1-run leads, but 2-run leads, and then tied again, and then they go to extras again, and then another run comes from the Dodgers before the Astros nail it down with a 7-6 win in Game 2. They now head to Houston for 3 straight games. Does this change the series now that it's split? And not only now that it's split, but in the fashion in which it was split?
I don't think it changes it by the fashion. I think the Dodgers can extract something from the fact that they came back when down by 2 in the 10th, even though they relinquished the lead late in the game as they did. So just the battle of it was fantastic. And I don't think the Dodgers lose anything from a sort of hopeful standpoint. The Astros did exactly what they wanted to do and maybe had to do, right? When they got Keuchel, and then you got Verlander going with their starting rotation. You better grab one of those two if you have any hope whatsoever of capturing the series. And now, over the next couple of games here, the Dodgers get an advantage with whoever's out on the mound until Keuchel's able to make his way back, likely for Game 5, right? So it's the Astros have done what they've as the Dodgers are the favorites here. The Astros have put themselves in a position to make a series of it, and now, of course, they got to try and stretch it out and capture one of these next two as well, where the Dodgers do have an advantage on the hill.
Yeah, I think this was the game that the Astros had to win. Yeah, kind of take the ending out of it, but with Verlander on the mound, you just couldn't lose that if you were Houston. So it was massive. And now, I guess the other side of that is you got to the bullpen. Yeah. And the bullpen isn't invincible anymore.
The untouchable bullpen.
And
that's what I mean about the fashion.
Yeah, and to me, it's more so, I don't really look at it as the Astros have exposed the Dodgers' bullpen and they're going to get to it every single game in the series. To me, the main thing is the bats are up. And if Houston's bats are up, well, all right, it's game on now. We got ourselves a bit of a series here. So I think I picked the Dodgers in five. And this was the game I thought the Astros would win anyways. So I don't know if a whole lot has necessarily changed, but I do think the Astros have a bit more of a chance moving forward here because, you know, the ALCS was basically Altuve and Correa carrying the mail for Houston. But now if they can get some of these other guys going again, the Dodgers are going to be in for a dogfight here moving forward, although I think they will take Game 3 with Yu Darvish on the mound.
I am really concerned about this series if the Dodgers hang on and win that game last night. Yeah. But exactly what you said, to me it looked like the Springers, the Altuves, the Correas, the Gurrells, they were swinging at stuff. They didn't look comfortable. And then if they go down 2-0 and head home, to me what that game did to them was they got their mojo back. They looked like they were just confident and going. So I think it's going to be an interesting series now. I had it going 6, maybe 7. I still see that happening. I don't see the Astros losing 3 straight at home, but I do see the Dodgers, this not affecting them and them coming back as well. Friday night, game of 3 in Houston has Yu Darvish on the mound for the Los Angeles Dodgers and Lance McCullers Jr. Charlie Morton will probably go on game 4 for the Astros. So McCullers and Darvish, do you guys like Yu Darvish and the Dodgers? This is literally why they went and got him.
I think so, man. Expect the Dodgers to go up 2-1 here.
Yeah, I think this is, it's a tough one for Houston. I would look to game 4 as the one where you can even up the series there. I'll take Darvish and the Dodgers.
I think Darvish just gets lit up. I do. I think he gets lit up.
You want to take off your ball cap with the big orange star on it?
It's on backwards. the Astros have played Yu Darvish throughout his career in Texas. He's had some very good games against them, and he's had some very bad ones. But it's interesting. To me, the big scary point for the Astros is their bullpen.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought, as much as I like A.J. Hinch, massive mistake last night leaving Giles in. When he walked Forsyth, you bring in Davinsky or Gregor then, and I think that this is over. The fact that he stuck with him, and I know that's a hard decision. The same with Jansen. Like, how long do you go with him? How long do you leave him in there? It's your closer, but I do think there's a point with closers, especially with more series to come, to get him out and let Davinsky get that last out after the Forsyth walk. But that's just me. I slept much better than I would have last night after that ended. Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on the station. Coming up, we'll hear from Brian Munns live in Pittsburgh. And I did want to mention this before we go to break, gentlemen. The Vancouver Whitecaps and their 5-0 victory over San Jose in the play-in game. It's not often you see a play-in team hammer another team like that, but literally a better team. And great game last night for Vancouver. First time.
Yeah, the superior team, right? Coming into that game, the San Jose Earthquakes, who finished 6th in the West, in 34 games had a minus 21 goal diff. You just don't.
I don't understand.
In soccer, they were one of four teams overall, or sorry, five teams in the MLS that had a negative goal diff, the only team in the playoffs. And last night was one of the sort of situations where you see where Vancouver's poised. They should be able to number two kick San Jose more or less, and they were able to do that. So tip of the cap to the Whitecaps.
Jesse Marshall talks Penguins with us next on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Royal Sports Power Hour on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets are in Pittsburgh to start three games in four nights. They'll take on the Penguins tonight on TSN 1290, 6 o'clock with Mr. Edmonds and Mr. Munns on the call. The afternoon ride with Husser and Rick Ralph, 3 till 5. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski at 5 p.m. till 6. And then the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you. Plenty to come here on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Brian Munns will join us live from Pittsburgh at the bottom of the hour. We have your NHL news and notes coming up, and hockey nights in Vegas still to come as well. First qualification right around the corner. We are going to delve into the game more specifically right now. Also to come today on the program, Jeff Reinbold talks some NFL. Jamie McLennan, the former goalie and TSN broadcaster, are going to join us. Always good to hear from he was in doing the game last. What was the last game? Minnesota? He was between the boards there. Going to do some Jets games on TSN 3 as well this season. We're going to delve in to the Penguins and the Jets tonight now, and your chance to weigh in on the lineup, the sending of Nick Petan down, and the lines, and Mr. Matt Hendricks being activated off the IR coming up on the Boss Pizza fan line today as well at 9 o'clock, an hour of your phone calls. Right now, we want to welcome back into the program from theathletic.com and at the Athletic Pit, Mr. Jesse Marshall. How are you, sir?
Good, guys. How are you this morning?
Doing very well. A lot of interest around Winnipeg with this game tonight, not just because it's the first game in days for the Winnipeg Jets, but because it is against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. What have you seen from them so far this year?
Sort of the same way they love to play hockey, guys, sort of exchanging chances, a little bit of a fire wagon offense. But I think they've been a little bit lax in some areas to start the season. I mean, obviously their power play has been unbelievable, but defensively speaking, they just haven't managed the puck well. They look like a team that knows it's October and is coming off of back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. So I think there's an attention to detail part to their game that's missing right now. Mike Sullivan's talked about it at length. He's certainly not going to accept it's October as an excuse. But the offense has been there. It's been what we've expected from this team. It's just the puck management side of it and the attention to detail on the defensive side has been particularly bad.
Jesse, you've got a fantastic piece for The Athletic on Brian Dumoulin's gap control and how he was able to manage Connor McDavid. Could you please share that with us?
Yeah, I think that the genesis of it is that, I think Penguins fans have seen Brian Dumoulin do this to star players now for really 3 years. Alex Ovechkin, Steven Stamkos, you name it. He's a big guy. He doesn't seem like an elite skater when you watch him because he's got that big key stride, but to be able to go head-to-head with Connor McDavid and keep a strong gap, keep him in front of you and to the inside of you all night long is a testament to what Brian Dumoulin does for this team on a nightly basis. And we talked about in the first period, Mike Sullivan really wanted to get that Dumoulin-McDavid matchup. He wanted that to be his go-to. And one of the first shifts they took against each other, McDavid caught a loose puck and was off to the races, and Dumoulin scrambled to keep up. And it just seemed like from that point, once Brian Dumoulin became aware of the speed he was dealing with, he adequately prepared for it. From that point on, through the second and third periods, he was able to keep McDavid in front of him, keep him wide, not get beat, and really limit him effectively throughout the course of the game. And I think he did a better job of it than Chris Letang did. I think he did a better job of it than anyone on the roster. And unfortunately, Justin Schultz got injured late in the first period. Some of the line combinations got, you know, mixed up as a result, and McDavid scored the game tying goal, the first shift he takes away from Dumoulin in that game. So I thought it would be nice to kind of just highlight what Dumoulin's done for the Penguins over the course of it. And again, this is something we've seen from him game after game, year after year. His numbers individually against star players have been absolutely unbelievable, and I think it's his ability to keep them in front of him and use his long reach to keep them in check on the rush that makes him an effective defenseman.
A lot of talk in Winnipeg about the bottom six for the Winnipeg Jets and the top nine debate and the lineup going into tonight's game, Jesse. Tell us a little bit about the Penguins' third line and whom this Jets' third line will be facing tonight.
Well, they got a new face in the lineup in Riley Sheahan. That was a trade that was made over the weekend. He made his debut against the Oilers the other night and did not look out of place in between Carl Hagelin and Patrick Hornquist. So it's Shane and the Swedes for the Penguins tonight. Formerly, they had Greg McKegg, who came in on a tryout and made the team out of camp, former Florida Panther, who's just a spark plug that's now bumped down to the fourth line. But that third line has been an area, the bottom six, I think, really, for the Penguins as a whole, guys, has been a kind of an eyesore through the first, you know, 10 games of the season. I think that because of some of the special team situations they've been in and just the sheer amount of penalties that they've taken, we haven't gotten to see a lot of guys like Ryan Reeves on the fourth line, you know, and things of that nature. And unfortunately for him, you know, he's been looking at about 3-4 minutes a game on that fourth line. So they're hoping that bringing in Riley Sheahan is going to solidify that bottom six, give them a true legitimate third line center that can play a 200-foot game, be effective at both ends of the ice, and take key faceoffs. That's something that they really missed in the absence of both Nick Bonino and Matt Cullen. So only one game under his belt so far, but he did register his first point of the season the other night against the Oilers. So he's off to a good start and seems to be fitting in well with Hornquist and Hagelin on that third line.
Please share with us the journey of Antti Niemi that he had here early in the season, man.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were feeling pretty optimistic about that signing when it took place. I think a lot of people said, well, you know, he's coming off a bad Dallas team that wasn't notorious for its good defense and kind of got hung out to dry there. And they brought him in on a you know, bargain level price to back up Matt Murray, but it just didn't work out. His goals against average was around 8. His save percentage was, you know, low 700s for whatever reason. And I know that a lot of people have said that he didn't get the opportunity to prove himself in Pittsburgh because he played the second leg of a back-to-back where the Penguins looked like a tired hockey team for all three of his starts. But I think if we examine the data tells us that he performed below expectation even given, you know, the maybe poor defensive environment that he was in. So after Saturday night's game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where he allowed another 7 goals, Jim Rutherford pulled the trigger this week to put him on waivers and called up Casey DeSmith from the American Hockey League, who at this point, up in the 4 games he's played this year, has not allowed a goal at even strength at all. So I think from a Pittsburgh perspective, I think a lot of fans feel comfortable with that move. And even though DeSmith will be getting his first taste of NHL action, I think it's going to be he'll be hard pressed to perform worse than Antti Niemi did. It just didn't work out. He looked, honestly, guys, looked like a goaltender that had lost his sense of fundamentals. So whether it be angles, rebound control, glove hand, there just wasn't anything there to write home about. And when the Penguins needed saves, he didn't make them, and the games that he was in got completely out of control really quickly. 10-0 to Chicago, 5 goals against Tampa, and then another 6-goal performance against Tampa. And the Penguins aren't in a position where they can play Matt Murray 62, 70 games a year. He's still young, and they've got to have somebody back there that they can rely on. And you know, you can't have your starter coming in to clean up the backup's work.
Speaking of Matt Murray, a lot of people are wondering if he can continue what he sort of put up in a short NHL career. Nothing to laugh at on that resume, but he looked spectacular the other night.
He did, and I think the key to that was that was a game that the Penguins really took a lot of care in. You know, again, going back to that puck management piece, they've not made it easy on him. I think there was some undue concern at the beginning of the year that maybe his first few performances weren't really hearkening back to what we'd come to expect from him. But he was in a volatile environment. In the odd man rushes he was going up against to start the season, he kept them in games. The Penguins haven't lost in regulation when Matt Murray has started this season. And he's the reason why behind that. I mean, of course they can score goals, but as I mentioned, they just haven't been tight defensively. And we've seen him, you know, have to get athletic, and that's not something we've come to expect from Matt Murray. He's a positional guy. He doesn't have the flash of a Marc-Andre Fleury, but he's had to have it early this year. The save he made against Mark Letestu Tuesday night, wide open net, dives across the crease and gets the shaft of his stick right on the puck in front of a gaping goal is an example of that. Probably the best save the most highlight reel save he's ever had in his career. So he's been getting a workout earlier this season, but I think the early results have again, been what we've expected from this kid over the course of the last couple years.
Jesse, the approach of Paul Maurice and the way he's utilizing the roster without question, the most distinction between top six and bottom six is causing quite a bit of ruckus over here and has got the whole situation under a microscope. Your thoughts on it from afar?
Well, I don't know if it's a situation where Paul Maurice just doesn't trust the bottom six, but I think the deployments that he's giving them give you that indication. And I was looking at just some data this morning, they just look sheltered. They just look like especially late in games, that he's not willing to go that direction. And it's funny because I think that there's a direct correlation between these two teams in that regard right now. I mean, I think that, you know, the Penguins have worked hard to try to remedy that situation. But from my perspective, it just doesn't seem like there's a trust factor there, and that Maurice is kind of babysitting those deployments a little bit and kind of trying to give them the easies. And you can only grind your top six down so long before the fatigue becomes a factor. I mean, you have to be able to roll four lines in this league. So I think that's something that both these teams are still trying to figure out in the early portion of the season.
Jesse Marshall from TheAthletic.com joining us today on The Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight at 6 on TSN 1290. Jesse, these two teams are going to face off against each other twice in the next 4 days. How do they match up in your mind?
There's just something about these Penguins-Jets games, guys, to me, that are so exciting to watch. And they always seem to involve Evgeny Malkin getting into it with somebody, whether it be Blake Wheeler or Dustin Byfuglien. I'm not sure what it is about that. I think it's just that these two teams love to play heavy hockey. They love to get in on the forecheck. They love to hit. They're both, unfortunately, known for taking a lot of penalties. I look forward to these. And I think right now you have two teams specifically in situations that, you know, again, they're trying to figure out that bottom six. The Penguins haven't been overly good defensively early on in the season. Knowing the way that Paul Maurice likes to play, I think we're going to get some great back-and-forth hockey over the next 4 days. I think you can expect to see these teams exchange chances. I think the Penguins play a style of hockey that lends itself to that. So I look for a lot of scoring chances, a lot of penalties, and the goaltenders are going to have to be sharp. There's just something about this matchup. The spark always seems to light when these two teams meet recently. And, even though they're not, conference or division rivals, there seems to be some sort of bad blood buildup from the meetings that they've had over the course of the last years that makes these games so much fun to watch.
Great stuff, Jesse. We appreciate your time and enjoy your thoughts on it. Should be a couple of great games over the next 4 days between these two teams. Have a good one.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Jesse.
At The Athletic Pitt is where you can follow Jesse. Or no, sorry, that's where you follow The Athletic Pittsburgh. At J Marsh FOF is where you can follow Jesse Marshall on Twitter. And, of course, TheAthletic.com is where you read his fine work. Your next chance to qualify, or your first chance today, rather, for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
First chance to qualify on today's big show on TSN 1290 at tsn1290.ca. We are live from the Royal Sports Studio, and we're looking for the 12th caller through as TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present
Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November. We'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply return airfare to and from Las Vegas, free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly, two hockey tickets, Jets versus the Golden Knights again on the 10th of November at their home arena in Vegas. Four nights accommodations on the Strip and $1,290 cash to help you cover whatever you wish to cover with $1,290 cash in Sin City. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays, 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. with Don Vito Roundtable and Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride at 5:15 p.m., or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Our next grand prize announcement is coming up November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. 12th caller through will also get a Jets Gear gift card. We were online yesterday on the TSN 1290 Facebook page. Gave away three Jets Gear gift cards.
Nice
qualifications.
Spin on your part.
I didn't go as hard as I wanted to, like on the
which would be rare
Price
for you.
Is Right.
Thank you.
Yes, that, very rare. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. But I went with a little soft roll, and it stopped on $80. So the
nice.
Three online qualifiers yesterday got a Jets Gear gift card worth $80. Thanks for everybody who tuned into our TSN 1290 Facebook page for that. Right now on our show, The Big Show, here on TSN 1290, our 12th caller through is...
Junior Denbrock.
Junior Denbrock.
Isn't that a Vegas betting name or what?
No kidding.
Junior, that's just a badass handle no matter where you are.
You know what? JD with the BROK.
Junior Denbrock?
You got it, brother.
You know what? That's such a cool handle. Even if people ask me my name, I would just start with the last one. Denbrock.
You know what?
Junior.
JT, for the right amount of money, I will let you use it.
Denbrock, Junior. That's right. Book it. I like it. How long have you been trying to qualify?
Right since it started, brother.
Awesome.
Great, since it started. Couldn't be happier. Last trip, but hey, you never know.
This is a dumb question for a guy with a name like Junior Denbrock, but have you ever been to Vegas before?
Do bears go to the bathroom in the woods?
I got a feeling that your ancestors might have helped build Vegas.
You never know.
You never know. Do you know who you'd be taking, Junior?
You know what? I think I'm going to do a little poker tournament. Last man standing is the guy who's coming.
Wow.
No way! That is outstanding. What's the buy-in on that tournament?
You know what? I think you just bring a case of your favorite lollipops, and we'll let it rip from there.
You were made for this contest. You were made to go to Vegas, Junior.
You bet, your brother.
Well, just for qualifying, you've got a Jets Gear gift card. Congratulations, and we thank you so much for listening to TSN 1290. You are good to go for our final grand prize draw on November the 6th.
Right on. Thank you very much, and let's go get a W in Pittsburgh tonight. What do you guys say?
We'll find out for sure. I'm very intrigued about tonight's game and the next three over four nights for sure.
Good luck, man. If your name is Junior, there's no nickname. You're Junior.
Junior Denbrock.
Cool, right? Yeah.
What's your name? Denbrock Junior. What's yours?
I want in on this poker tournament. I gotta find. I'm finding the way. I got the information here. I know how to find Junior. So this is that's the best one we've heard yet for sure.
Absolutely.
As employees of TSN 1290, we can't win this contest, but that might be the backdoor way in. There's always a way in. There's always a way in. That might be it. Well, I'm going with Junior. I won his poker tournament. Well done.
Sounds like if he's married, his wife's gonna have to buy her way into the tournament too. Sitting there to make.
Yeah, she's not out of it. She's got a chance.
Hun, I know you put these appetizers out and clean the room, but you still got to buy in. You know what I'm saying, hun? Junior Denbrock's our latest qualifier, and we'll do it again at 8:15 a.m. today on The Big Show, 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 on the afternoon ride. Good luck, Junior. We'll talk Jets with Mr. Brian Munns next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Thank you. Junior Denbrock was our first qualifier today on Hockey Nights in Vegas. Your next chance to qualify coming up at 8:15 today on The Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight, 6 p.m. East Coast start for the Jets game tonight. We'll have that for you live on TSN 1290 along with full pre- and post-game coverage. Afternoon Ride 3 till 5 with Hustler and Rick Ralph. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6, and the Huron Windows postgame show with Kevin Olszewski follows after that. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open at 9 o'clock today. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open on the postgame show as well. Very interested to get your thoughts on some of the moves the Jets made and the game tonight after this little bit of a layoff. Last Friday was the last time the team played.
Do we have a, can I give some ominous stats here real quick?
Yes, let's have them.
Jets at PPG Paints Arena, 0-8-1. Jets have lost 9 of the last 10 against Pittsburgh. And since returning to Winnipeg, the Jets outscored 63-39 in 14 games versus Pittsburgh.
So you're saying there's a chance. I love that. Remember that game last year when they went into Pittsburgh and the physicality, the...
Yeah. And a lot of it was started good game. Simply from... It wasn't Buff hitting open ice. It's something we referenced really since that point, just finishing his checks, and it causes a lot of trouble.
We're going to talk Jets-Penguins right now and get the latest from Mr. Brian Munns, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, live from Pittsburgh. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. I just met Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller in the Pittsburgh hotel?
Yeah. I got up like, I don't know, 90 minutes ago, went down for a quick little workout. And, you know, in a daze, you know, you wake up, you just kind of go in the elevator and I'm kind of in a glazed looking over the numbers trying to figure out which one's the gym. And all of a sudden he's like, you're looking for the gym? And I look over, I was like, whoa, hey. Yeah. Kind of cool.
And you looked at him and said, why yes, Fokker, I am.
I didn't really know which road to go down because honestly, I was shocked. You're not expecting to see anybody famous. And when you just kind of wake up, it's kind of like, oh, hey. So we had a quick, I don't know, 45-second chat as we cruised down from our palatial high-rise. Well, he was a lot higher than I was, I think.
Of course, he knows you're going to the gym just because of your physical presence, right? Looks at you, go, you're going to the gym.
Wow, he's small. Like, he's a little guy.
Oh, yeah?
He's in pretty good shape, though.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. So he knew where the gym was a little bit more than me, so thankfully I ran into him.
Did you say thanks for the help, Gaylord? We'll see you later. that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's kind of a neat way to start the day.
It also means that the NHL treats you well when you travel if you're staying at that hotel with Ben Stiller.
Again, he was a lot higher than I was.
Thanks for joining us today, Brian. Of course, the news of the day yesterday was the move of Matt Hendricks off the IR and sending Nick Petan down to the Manitoba Moose. Give us your thoughts on that and maybe why you think that move was done.
Well, not a big surprise when you look at it. You know, Nick had a pretty good preseason. He was able to put up some points, but in the six games that he played during the regular season, didn't do a lot, to be perfectly honest with you, whether it was 5-on-5 and he got some power play time, and it just didn't quite work for him right now. Nick Petan's a good hockey player, and I think everybody needs to kind of pump the brakes here a little bit, let him go back to the American Hockey League. And this is something that we've seen the Jets be able to start to do now that they've got more depth in the organization. And you look at the really good teams like Detroit and Nashville and Pittsburgh, they like their young talent to spend some time in the American Hockey League. So I think this is a good thing for Nick. I think it can take some pressure off him because I think he's one of those guys that looks at social media and he sees what everybody's saying, either positively or negatively, and he can just go down to a league I think he can excel at and get some confidence back. And Nick Petan, I think, is still going to be a good Winnipeg Jet down the road. But when you look at the contract situation, Winnipeg doesn't feel that they want to take the chance on Mark O'Donnell, losing him right now just for free. So this is an open spot on the bingo card that they can send Nick down and add some experience here with Matt Hendricks centering that line with Brendan Lemieux and Joel Armia tonight.
And from the perspective of the bottom six here, Munzee, and the fact that the Jets are up against a couple of the upper echelon teams here over the next 4 days, three games, how concerned are you with the bottom six right now?
Well, I'm curious to see what this fourth line will look like. You know, we've kind of got an idea what Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev and Sean Mathias can hopefully bring to the club when they're together. I know Kopp's not really thrilled with the way his season has started. He's kind of mentioned that you know, quietly and rightfully so. You know, I think he'd like to have a few more points than he does right now. And, you know, Sean Mathias has had some really good chances, just can't seem to bury it. And I know it's burdening him right now because he spent a lot of time this summer trying to fine-tune his body for what he believed could give him the best opportunity to succeed this year with it being a contract year for him. I think Brandon Tanev has come as advertised. He's done a good job on the penalty kill. He can fly. He leads the Jets in hits right now, so his role has been okay. But I'm really curious to see what Hendricks and Lemieux and Armia can do. I expect more from Joel Armia. There's no question about it. Looking forward to seeing Matt Hendricks for the first time in a Jet jersey tonight. He's a guy that the veterans have really embraced coming into this room, and I think he's done a really good job off the ice. And, you know, we all, I think, got excited from that first game that Lemieux was able to play against Minnesota. And as we saw yesterday at practice as well, he's going to get some work on the power play as well on the second unit tonight. So Paul Maurice is giving him every opportunity to try and come in and make an impact on this club.
You know, Brian, you touch on, like, we all want to see more from Armia, and Mathias needs to finish, and Kopp wishes he had a better. Like, basically, that's the issue for Paul Maurice, too. Is it not just the whole looking for somebody and a couple guys to basically step up and solidify some of these positions?
Yeah, and it hurts right now with no Adam Lowry. I think that's a really big hole for this team as their number three center, a guy that can log some minutes, a guy that's 6'5" and, you know, can do a lot of things for this club special teams-wise when he's on the ice. So I don't know if people understand how big of a loss right now it is for Adam Lowry, but, you know, this is the chance for these young guys to come in here, and I heard you guys talking earlier on. Yeah, we've never seen a win in this building here yet since the Jets came back. So, you know, it's going to be a good test. Pittsburgh's playing well. They've won four of their last five. They've been able to outscore teams. You know, they had a tight game against Edmonton here on Tuesday night when they beat them 2-1 in overtime. So kind of seems right now that Pittsburgh can play kind of any way you want. So intrigued to see how this thing plays out here tonight. And this might be the biggest test that Connor Hellebuck has had so far this season coming in on his four-game winning streak.
A lethal power play by the Penguins. They're second in the league right now at 30%. The boys better stay out of the sin bin.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And if you just want to break it down to the games since we've been coming here for the last 6 years, they're 7-for-15 against the Jets. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty simple mindset coming in here. And it's funny listening to a lot of the Penguins talking to some of their guys yesterday and then listening last night when we got into town from what they were talking about. You know, they're expecting this big, bad Winnipeg team to come in based on the Malkin and Wheeler fight from last year. And they're kind of building this thing up to a UFC event here in Pittsburgh tonight for some crazy reason. And, you know, there's no Peluso, there's no Thorburn anymore. So I think we're going to see a fast-paced game between these clubs that might surprise some Penguin fans.
I blame Ben Stiller for the extra high motive of fisticuffs and everything else going on into this game. They've had a lot of chance to practice this week. We heard they were working on some speed of their game and everything else, and there's no bigger test than the next three games in four nights. What do you expect to see better from the Jets after all that time of practicing leading into this weekend and the three games, Brian?
Well, two words for me that the team has used a lot is pace and then execution. You know, we talked earlier about Sean Mathias and Andrew Kopp having opportunities to score, and it hasn't gone in yet. They need to start having more pucks go across the goal line. And, you know, Blake Wheeler's only scored one goal this year, guys. At the end of the day, they need more than Mark Scheifele and Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine on a regular basis here to put the puck in the net. So I think all in all, right down the lineup here, they've worked hard. There's no question. We've sat and watched every minute of practice that the team has had since playing on Friday night, and they've worked hard at it. They've done a lot of drills. Todd Woodcroft, one of their skills coaches, has spent a lot of time on the ice with different drills and trying to fine-tune some areas around the net, the eye-hand coordination, and just different little things that they feel they've used their time wisely enough coming into this road trip here. So at the end of the day, we'll find out tonight at 6 o'clock if it all pays off and they're able to get some things going in their direction, because as we touched on earlier here, Pittsburgh can score, and as we saw last week, Columbus has a pretty good club as well. So this will be a really good litmus test for this Winnipeg Jets club here coming up over the next 48 hours.
Seven assists take some sting away from Wheeler with only one goal at least anyway. Hey, I want to ask you about the power play. I don't understand why Paul Maurice doesn't really load up that top power play like you see some of the teams do in the NHL, and especially the ones that seem to have a fairly successful and consistent power play. Your thoughts on Nikolaj Ehlers not being on the first-team power play?
We were talking about that yesterday at practice, and it is kind of intriguing, but I guess on the other side of it, too, you take a look, and they're kind of trying to spread it around a little bit if that first unit, and it gives Kyle Connor a chance to skate alongside Scheifele and Wheeler, which they're doing five-on-five, so I think at one point they're still trying to generate some chemistry there with Laine and Byfuglien on the back end of it, and we know kind of what the key to those power play five are, with Laine being on the left side and Wheeler being able to shoot from the right and Scheifele kind of set up in the slot. It gives the Jets three pretty good options to work around. And then that second unit centered by Brian Little with Nikolaj Ehlers, and then, as we talked about, Brendan Lemieux is going to be up on that one tonight with Josh Morrissey and Tyler Myers, and Jacob Trouba will probably get a little bit of time there as well. So I think right now they just want to try and spread it out, that if one group doesn't get really frustrated, you look on the bench and you're like, oh, geez, we've kind of got nothing left here. So I think they want to give everybody the opportunity to try and maximize what they can do if they have to go the entire 2 minutes in trying to get that goal.
What are your thoughts on Lemieux? Because he got 9 minutes of ice time. I liked everything about him, but he gets another chance here to the point where Nick Petan was sent down, and he's going to get some power play time.
Well, he adds the grit, first and foremost. And you talk to some of the players in the Minnesota room after the game real quick, saw a couple of guys that I know just from years past, and his name came up a couple of times in conversation where they knew that he's kind of like that little wrecking ball out there that you need to be aware of because he rides that line so thinly. And he's got some pretty good hands. You know, he's put up some points. He's been a really good net front guy at all various levels that he's played, whether it was in the Ontario League or whether it was in the American League last year. And I think right now he just adds that bit of bite to the Jets' bottom six here, where with Pittsburgh's skill and Columbus's skill, they're going to be aware when number 48's on the ice. So a little bit of that unknown for a Jet player coming in that I wouldn't say a lot of other players really have that same cachet with. And at the end of the day, you hope that that eye-hand coordination and the skill that he has and the hockey pedigree and his family here can rub down and maybe he can make something happen. So not just a fourth-line guy for the Jets coming in here, but I think a guy that can hopefully help with something on that power play as well if the Jets are afforded some of those opportunities here tonight.
Great stuff, Brian. Really looking forward to listening to this game as well with you and Paul Edmonds. It's going to be an interesting three games in 4 nights. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, busy time. It's been so quiet, and all of a sudden now it's like a track meet here on the schedule. So it'll be fun to get back at it here and see what the guys can do, and I'll say hi to Ben again for you later on today.
White Goodman working on his dodgeball game with you this morning in the hotel.
That's Wednesday.
Yeah.
White Goodman.
He's a beauty.
You remind me of White Goodman. You eat well. You work out well. You go to the gym.
Whip one of these Greek yogurts at you real quick.
That's, that's a line that you would use, or that White Goodman would use. Six packs are made in the kitchen. Heard that several times. We'll continue breaking this down. NHL news and notes are next on the Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on The Big Show, live from the Royal Sports Studios here at TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Locking it in already.
You are so funny when you oppose picks, man.
You know what's weird is when I oppose picks, when I say that's a bad pick, I'm usually right, but yet
really?
I can't make my own picks.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, because we're picking him and we're right half the time.
Well, yeah, the half that I don't like are the ones that you get wrong.
You think it just works out like
for
that?
For sure.
Really, huh?
The Oakland KC? What'd you guys lose on last week? I guarantee you it was the Atlanta New England one. I said I don't like that pick.
I just thought you were a Falcons fan. I didn't know you jumped off the bandwagon.
No, I'm about winning $150.
You're a beauty, is what you
it
are.
Could get me out of a couple jams. So I'm trying really hard. It is the Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight, 6 o'clock. TSN 1290. Time for your NHL news and notes. Let's start with the Vegas Golden Knights telling Shipachev, whom they signed out of the KHL and sent down to the minors at the start of the year, I thought for roster moves and everything else, that he can seek a trade. I have two issues with this. What are you doing? And second of all, why are people telling everybody else, GMs, you can seek a trade?
I know this guy has no NHL pedigree. I know he doesn't have, you know, a resume to speak of. But should you not be orchestrating a trade for one of your... Like, you want your agent to call and say, Colorado's interested, they're willing to offer it. Like, basically telling an agent to do your work for you, I have a problem with.
Well, doing their work, if you're so upset and you want out of here, go ahead and see what you can sum it up and let me know. I think if Shipachev and his agent are being slapdies, then I can see that. This is very, very interesting to me because by accounts that I'm reading and hearing about, Shipachev is a bit of a, I don't know, man. You just, maybe he's a guy that's identified pretty early on that you're not all that interested, or there's a whole lot of growing up to do. And until you think your number two doesn't stink, kid, then get the hell out of here.
Look, I understand. I don't like when players play that card either. I really don't. But you brought a guy at 30 years old out of the KHL who's one of their leading scorers, and you don't have him in the NHL. If he doesn't make the team, I guess, fair enough. But what opportunity has he been given?
They're talking all kinds of, like, the Burmistrov, what we heard here, and maybe it didn't seat so well with the East-West, and instead of the up and down, I'm hearing that big time that people are complaining about that.
But what did you expect? I detest that side of athletes. I really do. But what did you expect when you're pulling a top scorer at 30 years old out of a league and he's not playing in the league he signed to play in? Like, I get the diva and all that. I don't like it. But what did you expect from this guy? You think he'd be happy not playing in the National Hockey League, leaving his homeland and a highly sought-after commodity to not be in the league that he signed to play in?
Yeah, I don't understand what George McPhee's doing at all here. And if you're George McPhee, you're basing this on 2-3 games. You're not even giving the guy a chance to be acclimated into North America, into the NHL. Give him 10-15 games. See what you got with him there, because you sign him for $4.5 million. You sign him to be your top center. And I know everyone's saying, well, Vegas is off to this hot start. Look at how well they're doing. Well, their best defenseman might not even be on the team right now, because Shea Theodore is putting up 9 points in 5 AHL games so far.
Played against the Moose yesterday.
And George McPhee doesn't want to call him up because he's trying to get a 5th-round pick instead of a 6th-round pick for Lucas Pisa. So there's a lot of things going on with that team that I'm really confused about. And I wonder if there's a team out there that could maybe pull off a bit of a sleeper move and get this guy into a situation where he could produce offensively, and you might get yourself a bit of a steal.
I promise you this. I wasn't in the meetings. It's not a fact. But you can't tell me George McPhee didn't tell this kid, or this guy, he's 30, would be in the National Hockey League.
You weren't in the meetings?
I was not in the meetings.
Thanks for clarifying.
And I don't have a source that says this, but you can't tell me he signs a deal thinking there's even a chance he's not in the National Hockey League.
Sure, but you still have to play as the team wants you to play, don't you, if you refuse to do so?
But he didn't even start the season with them. Like, to Brandon's point, it's not like he actually made the team out of camp.
And he came into his first game after the call-up and scored. So, I don't know. I really don't know what's going on there. It's beyond bizarre to me, especially if you're Shipachev, you sign in the NHL, knowing that you're probably saying goodbye to the Olympics this year, a chance to be on what would be the heavy gold medal favorite for Team Russia. Like, he signed here to play big minutes in the NHL, and he's, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Don't promise things that you're not gonna. You don't know is going to happen. Is my point. If he plays 20 games,
doesn't need to. Who cares? You fit in or you get out. Why is this? Look at what they're doing in Vegas, up and down the ice. Wicks, you were talking about, everyone's raving about how they're skating against Chicago and up and down the ice, up and down. If Shipachev refuses to play like that or come to an understanding of it, and if that's, maybe there's more to this in the locker room and all the rest of it, then why do you have to absorb that? You don't have to promise him jack crap.
That's not what's going on here. McPhee doesn't have room for him, just like he doesn't have for Theodore, and now he's just told he could go find his season.
You just talked about how you gave this guy for the K with all this upside talent and all the rest of it. What do you mean you don't have room for
him? He was sent down contract-wise because they don't want to lose somebody else. The only reason he's back is because of injuries.
Well, they're not happy. I know in reading stuff and what's coming out of Vegas that they're not happy at all the way he's playing. Like, it sounds like it's a fairly sizable problem. It contradicts what they're trying to accomplish as a team right now.
I could see him being a diva, and I rarely defend divas, but I understand the situation here. I don't see him even coming if he wasn't promised some things that he's not getting. And I understand play dictates that, but you can do that in my mind after 10 games. You're literally not even 10 games into the season. He wasn't on the roster out of the gate. I guarantee you he was promised things that he didn't get, and now he's being told that you can seek out your own deal. If I left my own country where I was a star and was promised things and they didn't come to fruition, and now I'm told to fix the problem myself, I would be a little upset
promised
too.
Promised what? Like, what could you be promised? Simply ice time?
Just to be on the team. Just to be on the team.
If he was a strong player and playing he'd be on the team, right?
He scored in his first game.
I see Shea Theodore. Like, Shea Theodore is doing nothing wrong to make his case to make the team. George McPhee's just for whatever reason holding on to those third pairing defensemen trying to make a deal, and it doesn't make sense to me. Especially when you're off to this start, and Shea Theodore would help your team immensely. I believe Shipachev would help your team immensely. I don't know.
Now, that being said, they're 7-1, so I'm yelling about a lot of stuff. I don't get it. I didn't get how he handled and he's getting all this credit. I didn't get how he handled and did so many favors to so many GMs at the expansion draft. And I know all of it's for naught because they're 7-1. But this doesn't sit well with me that for whatever reason they said that now you can go seek your own trade, even though literally less than 6 months ago I signed you and promised you all this stuff.
I heard someone close to the organization talking about this, and they made it sound like there's a problem with him. Like he's not fitting in, and I'm going to lean towards McPhee here. I'm not going to think that you're keeping a guy outside of your roster that's going to help you a lot and fits in. They made it sound like it's like water and oil.
It's going to be an interesting situation to follow, for sure. Shane Doan, as per Pierre LeBrun of TSN, accepts a position in the hockey operations department and will work under Colin Campbell.
Loves the game, so it makes sense that he'd still be involved, right?
We'll get Jamie McLennan's thoughts on this.
I'd like to see more skilled guys in there, to be honest. I know Shane Doan's Mr. Nice Guy, but you look at some of the hits he's made. I don't know. It's interesting to me how it's always kind of the rough and tumble guys that get in, and it's never, I know we mentioned Paul Kariya's name all the time, but it's never, you never see guys of that ilk kind of get into that sort of department. It's always
he ruined Pavlik's season. Remember that?
Yeah, there you go.
We'll take a break. Jamie McLennan is going to talk more hockey with us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and the Penguins on TSN 1290 tonight at 6. Of course, full pre- and post-game coverage on the station as well. Our province is packed with shiny stars in the world of the sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. Third hour of The Big Show this morning. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in the next segment. Jeff Reinbold will join us at the bottom of the hour, talk about Week 8 or Week 9. What are we at in the National Football League? Week 8 in the National Football League. Get started tonight with a Thursday nighter. And, of course, an hour of your phone calls at 9 on the Jets and their lineup and the moves they made. And, of course, what you expect over the next three games in 4 nights. Right now, continuing the hockey talk, we're happy to welcome back into the program with Jim Troy and Brandon, Mr. Jamie McLennan of TSN Hockey Analyst, and, of course, the Overdrive in 1050. Jamie, how are you today?
Not too bad. How are you doing today?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining us. And we saw you between the boards, or between the benches, I guess, in last Jets home game. What are your impressions of the Jets so far this year, 4-3?
I like what I saw. And obviously they stubbed their toe coming out of the gate and were struggling a little bit defensively, and Steve Mason's still looking to find his form in a new organization, new defensive core, everything, new coaching systems. But they have a deep talent pool, and it's no secret of what I think of the, you know, top six forwards, guys like Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine, and I think Mark Scheifele's a superstar that doesn't get enough play. And I've always been a Hellebuyck fan. I think I've been on this show talking and defending Connor Hellebuyck. I think, you know, at 23 years old last year, playing 50-plus games, it was a lot. And there were times where he hit the ditch and he struggled. But you got to give opportunity to young players to grow. And I think the signing of Steve Mason on a couple different levels has helped him, because it's helped drive him. And it also provides some stability there if he starts to struggle a little bit. So I like the Jets. I really do. I think their defensive core is solid. There's not too many weaknesses in that organization or in that lineup, other than when they play their game. When they get off their game and they start to chase the puck and get into penalty trouble and play undisciplined in their own zone, we've seen what could happen.
Jamie, from an observant standpoint, it seems that Ken Hitchcock can make things a little bit difficult with the environment for goaltenders. Your thought on what transpired with Ben Bishop the other night, and if you see that impacting their relationship going forward?
I think the relationship would be fine. I know Ken Hitchcock, he likes to press buttons, but he doesn't hold a grudge. And he'll come right back with Bishop. Bishop being upset, that's just him being a competitor. And it's a 3-2 game. It wasn't like he allowed three goals in the first 10 minutes and was kind of out to lunch. That being said, I was watching the game. I didn't like Bishop's game. He's usually so strong. He's one of the best in the league at handling the puck and making plays. He just had an off night. He cost them a goal outside the net. He cost them another chance against. It just, you could tell that he just didn't have his game and he was fighting it. And a lot of times coaches will allow a starter to fight through it. That night, Hitch decided, you know what, I'm going to make a change here to give my team a jolt. And I don't think Ben should have taken it personally, but he has the right to be pissed off, because he's a competitor and he wants the net and he wants to be the guy, and he was signed to be the guy. That being said, he said his piece, Hitch said his piece, and I guarantee you it's water under the bridge, and Bishop will be starting next game.
Jamie, what are your thoughts on Vegas being 7-1? And we were just discussing the Shipachev situation and everything else that's going on with George McPhee and this roster. 7-1, you can't argue with. But where do you see this going? And what do you think some of the moves McPhee needs to make going down the stretch here as the season wears on?
Well, it's been a great start. And I was part of the Minnesota Wild expansion team. And the one thing I'll say right off the get-go is, we weren't as talented as the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, the NHL made the rules a lot nicer for this expansion, to the point where they, you know, they had a deeper talent pool to choose off of. You know, we didn't have a James Neal on our team or a Marc-Andre Fleury. You had a Jamie McLennan, which, you know, I was a good goalie, but I wasn't a great goalie. And I think Marc-Andre Fleury's a great goalie. And, you know, you look at guys like Nate Schmidt, who's a really good puck mover from the back end, and David Perron, and these types of names, they could still be contributing factors to real good NHL teams, and they're not bit pieces. And with the Minnesota Wild, you know, with all due respect to my teammates and myself, a lot of times we were bit pieces on other teams. And so right away, you've got a deeper team to choose from. They've got a great coach in Gerard Gallant. I don't think people give him enough credit for what he's able to do. And the Florida Panthers are still trying to recover from what he, when he left there. And then you look at George McPhee, I think the way that he chose the team. The team is fast, they play it up-tempo style, and they're in your face, they're aggressive. So the way he chose his team and the players that fill out that roster, they're conducive to today's game, which is a fast, up-tempo game. So I think they hit a home run on a lot of different levels. I still don't think they're a playoff team, because I think McPhee, yeah, it'd be a great story, but you also, at the deadline, you've got some pieces that you can move to grow your team. So it may be a scenario where some of these players, their stock gets a lot higher, and he moves them for draft picks or younger prospects. So you may have to keep an eye out for that as well, because I think there's a short-term plan and a long-term plan in Vegas.
After 9 games, Mark Bergevin has told the boys the answer is in the room. Where do you see the Montreal Canadiens being at the 20-game mark?
I see them crawling out of this hole. I think they're a good team. That there's two teams that I've watched every one of their games, and they both of these teams have one consistent factor, and that's finding the back of the net. It's the Edmonton Oilers, and it's the Montreal Canadiens. And I'd be worried about a team if they weren't generating scoring chances, but both of them are generating scoring chances and just not finding the back of the net. And you know, quite honestly, you judge a team when you look at all of their top players and see what they're capable of, and then you fill out the roster afterwards. Well, six guys last game finally kind of had their game round into shape for the Montreal Canadiens, and it was their six best players: Price, Shea Weber, Galchenyuk, Gallagher, Pacioretty, and Drouin. All of them were on the score sheet, and guess what? Montreal wins. That there's no secret. You know, if they were looking in the room for Michael McCarron to be the answer, then they've got a problem. They called McCarron up to be a fourth-line energy guy, but if your top players aren't playing well, you see it in Winnipeg. If Scheifele and Ehlers and Laine and Hellebuck aren't playing well, guess what? They don't have success. So there's no secret in this league. Your top players have to be your best players, and they haven't been at the start of the season. In Montreal, if they're going to turn it around, it'll be on the back of those guys.
TSN hockey analyst and former NHL goalie and part of the Overdrive on TSN 1050, Jamie McLennan, joining us today on the Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight on the station at 6 p.m. Along those lines, Jamie, if the top guns aren't flying here in Winnipeg, that seems to be the hot topic throughout this season so far for the Jets, is that bottom six and Paul Maurice waiting for a couple guys to sort of step up and his philosophy in developing it. What do you see from those bottom six forwards, and where do you think he can go with them?
Well, it's opportunity. We had an opportunity, and I had a chance to sit down with him, and he talked about it, said, you know, we know what we have in the top six, and those guys have to play to their capabilities, but in the bottom six, you need either production or creating something. And it's not just running around with your, you know, like a chicken with its head cut off and just running into people. It's about creating momentum and creating scoring chances off of energy. I call them bump-up shifts, shifts that you get energy from the line, either being off, you know, being aggressive on the forecheck, pushing up the pace of the game so that everyone falls in behind them. And the fourth line hasn't consistently had that energy. You insert Lemieux into the lineup. You know, he's a good skater, or a guy who can get in on the forecheck and try and be aggressive and play that style. But that's what you're asking for a lot of these players. You know, is Armia capable of that? And it's not even running guys through the boards. It's just being hard on pucks and winning those 50-50 battles. And that's what you look for from third and fourth lines. If you may not have the skill set that maybe other organizations do, or you go head-to-head, you at least have to win your shift. And to me, the door is wide open for those bottom two lines for somebody to grab it and say, okay, I'm going to control the pace of this shift and be a difference maker. And that's why you insert guys like Lemieux and give opportunity to other players if the incumbents aren't doing the job.
Decimated early by injuries, most everybody wrote them off. Is Mike Yeo and the St. Louis Blues, are they for real?
I think they're for real. My biggest question mark, and I don't know if it's pointed fairly, but was Jake Allen. Because Jake Allen was struggling last year to be the number one clear cut. And we saw some guys that got opportunities last year, including Connor Hellebuck, that didn't push through to be that 60-game starter. Allen was one of them, to the point where St. Louis left him home on the road trip to play the Winnipeg Jets. And those are the types of things where it's still a young guy learning his craft to be a number one goaltender. They've got Jay Bouwmeester hurt, but their defensive core hasn't struggled one bit. And up front, I think they've done a very good job. But you can't forget, guys like Tarasenko, these guys are special players. And Steen came back in last night and had a bunch of assists and points and played very well against Calgary. So this is a team that I think can be a force out west. But people forgot on them because they had four or five massive injuries right from the get-go. But they've come through the other end, the other end of it, and they're playing very well and can be very dangerous.
Movember's right around the corner, and I remember throughout the years following your career some dirty dusters. Are you participating this year?
I would love that, but TSN they have a strict policy on facial hair for the on-air TV guys. I think it's reserved for guys like Jay and Dan and maybe, you know, Gino Retta, guys like that. I think if I grew a greasy duster, it would be frowned upon by our superiors. I would definitely get the email or the phone call saying, get rid of that nonsense. But you never know. Maybe I'll be lucky enough to be one of the chosen ones to grow a greasy duster.
It took me 40 years to be able to grow one, and that's when I got out of TV. I was like, finally, I'm getting out of television. I'm going to grow badass mustaches for Movember. Hey, Jamie, we appreciate your time as always. Great stuff, and we look forward to talking to you real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Jamie.
Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight at 6 o'clock. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9. NFL talk coming, but up next is your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's snowing outside. So you probably want to go to Vegas, go to the desert in a couple weeks. And TSN 1290 and redtag.ca want to get you there for Hockey Nights in Vegas. 12th caller through, 780-1290. And the 12th caller through will be our latest qualifiers. We're sending 5 lucky listeners, and we have 4 of them and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th. Return airfare to and from Sin City, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. 4 nights accommodation right on the strip at the MGM Grand. 2 hockey tickets to the Jets and Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena on the 10th. And $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays. 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin O. And 5:15 p.m. with Huss and Rick on the afternoon ride. Watch for bonus chances to qualify online as well. We did that yesterday on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Qualified 3 people, and we spun the wheel of plenty, as I like to call it. Winners will be announced Monday mornings, including our final grand prize draw on November the 6th to be our 5th and final contestant that wins the grand prize. More information at TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada hopes and shops for great travel deals. They don't hope because they shop there for great travel deals. And TSN 1290, RedTag.ca as well. Mr. Rowicki, our 12th caller through and latest qualifier is?
It is Zach Penner.
Zach Penner!
Penny!
Those are some good handles. Yeah. Junior Denbrock and Zach Penner. Sitting on a plane
like
together.
Trouble, those two cats.
Oh, yeah. Penner and Denbrock, side by side on a plane to Sin City. Forget about it. That's a good time right there. Throw in the other 3, Patty, everybody else. Good luck, Zach and Junior, our latest qualifiers. Each get a Jets Gear gift card just for doing so. And, of course, your next chance to qualify at 12:15 today and 5:15 today, weekdays, as we head towards our final grand prize draw on November the 6th for Hockey Nights in Vegas, courtesy of RedTag.ca and us here at TSN 1290. We discussed it yesterday, gentlemen. The goaltending situation, Connor Hellebuck between the pipes tonight for the Jets. And assuming on back-to-backs, it would go to Steve Mason tomorrow night with a rematch for him and his former team, the Columbus Blue Jackets. And then Hellebuck back on Sunday against the Penguins again. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on if that is the way he's leaning towards going Hellebuck, Mason, Hellebuck.
Wouldn't say it's automatic, but based on the way the schedule lays out, it'd be a fairly decent bet.
I think if Hellebuck goes tonight and has a stinker and Mason plays well, there's a on Friday, tomorrow night, I think there's a good chance Mason would go again on Sunday. It's going to be contingent, I believe, on Hellebuck looking big, square, and soft again tonight. And good luck with that. We're talking like the Jets here could be under siege over the next – in 3 of the next 4 games. This is going to be a pretty good measuring stick. You know, you're up against a couple of elite teams, and some of the underlying numbers that come into play into work here, especially in these 2 matches against Pittsburgh, they're bordering on being downright frightening, which is, I suppose, apropos given the time of year. We're close to Halloween, so you can, you know, get scared a couple times maybe here over the next 3-4 days.
What's your prediction tonight then? Jets have had – they've been off since Friday. They practiced Saturday, had an off day Sunday, then 3 days of practice, and they go into Pittsburgh tonight. What do you expect between the Jets and the Pens?
I think the Jets get it handed to them pretty good tonight. There's just too many underlying numbers and separate things that create separation, like even like shots generated towards the net where Pittsburgh's fifth, the Jets are 29th. You look at the scary difference on the power play for Pittsburgh to the penalty kill of the Jets. Also looking at the depth situation here for the Jets, I don't like it one bit. I'm going to say they lose by 3 tonight.
I think it'll be a high scoring affair. I think it'll be a 4-3, 5-4 type of game. I don't know who wins. I just don't see a way the Jets keep the Penguins off the scoreboard for too long. And Lord help them if they get into penalty trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean the Penguins will do damage to the best of penalty kills in the NHL. And you're going to sit back and let Crosby and Malkin hold the puck?
Mother.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is right there. So I would like to see the Jets stay out of the box. Not so much because they can't kill penalties. I want to see what they can do 5-on-5 against one of the top offensive teams in the league.
Pretty wild, Munsey telling us that since the return of the Jets at PPG, the Penguins operating at about a 50% rate on the power play. Like, gee whiz.
Yeah, that's very high. What about Connor Hellebuck? Can he go in here and steal one tonight if that's the way you guys are leaning the game going?
Hey, man, any goalie in the NHL, there's always the opportunity that you can stand on your head and play at an unconscious level. It's possible, and we can all pray that happens as Jets fans. If he, you know, he's on this real nice, cozy, sort of hot streak of playing at a real nice level, and when you got Pittsburgh and Columbus and Pittsburgh three times in the next 4 days, those sort of fluffy white clouds for goaltenders could come crashing down in a hurry.
Yeah, there's no reason he can't do that, but, you know, Steve Mason was kind of on his way to doing that against Columbus, and then it's backdoor tap-in breakaway one-timer, and all of a sudden a game where your goalie's looking good is wondering, how the hell did I just let 5 pass me in 15 minutes sort of thing. So he can do it, but it's going to be a little bit at least up to the guys in front of him to, at the very least, just give him a chance with some of the goals, right? Like, just kind of avoid the complete catastrophic meltdowns in front of him, and maybe he pulls one out for you.
Just, it's pretty neat when you look at Pittsburgh, and you know, we talk about or Munsey talking about Paul Maurice wanting to separate, right, the first power play from the second and all that sort of crap, which I don't like at all. Like, Ehlers should be on the Malkin, Kessel, Letang, Crosby, and along with Hornquist on that top power play unit for the Penguins. But to have Malkin, Kessel, Letang, Crosby, any time that group gets out in the ice, the sphincter tightens up a little bit.
It's a challenge, though. it's a challenge. And I'm interested to see, too, how the Pens go up against, like, Ehlers and Laine and Wheeler and Scheifele and how they – I mean, I remember those battles last game, last season, when, you know, Wheeler got beat by Crosby for the goal. Scheifele got beat by Malkin, you know, sort of shoulder to shoulder to get to the net and get a goal in. Like, these are the things that they admitted themselves that they want to take that next step. I'm intrigued by this game tonight, especially with the time off. And I'm not saying they're going to win the game. I'm just saying I'm intrigued by the battles and how this goes tonight.
But Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers' little Laine had better make some hay, brother, because when you're out in Pittsburgh and Sullivan gets the last change sort of thing, look, Tanev, Kopp, Mathias, Lemieux, Hendricks, Armia, look out on that bottom six tonight. It could just get feasted on in a real ugly way.
We'll get your thoughts on the game, the lineup, and the changes and everything else between the Pens and the Jets on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. But up next, Jeff Reinbold on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Penguins with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call tonight at 6 o'clock on TSN 1290. The afternoon ride, 3 to 5 with Rick and Hustler. Then the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 5 till 6 with Kevin Olszewski and friends. And they'll be back for the Huron Windows postgame show as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 o'clock today, and it'll be open on the postgame show as well if you want to weigh in. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, broadcasting live from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290 on Pembina Highway. It is snowing out today, and it looks like it's going to snow off and on for the next week and a half. So dare I say, to steal a line from Westwood, dare I say, winter is here?
The old F word, huh? flurries are back, boys.
Thank God.
Whew. Thought I was going to be out of a job again.
might have to bend in these shorts pretty soon.
As Jon Snow said in Game of Thrones, winter is coming.
Yes, indeed.
Winter's here, Jon. It comes every year. That's not a bold prediction. Wake up, Snow. Get your tribe together in Game of Thrones. Anyway, we of the North. We of the South via Hawaii towards the CFL, now towards the UK from Sky Sports. And a good friend, Coach Mr. Jeff Reinbold, joins us to talk some NFL. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good. You start talking about snow, I can use another F word, but I can't do it on the radio.
I would think, as a guy that is from Hawaii, the CFL provided you with many of dark days throughout the season.
I had way too many. I'll tell you what, I went to coach in Edmonton. I think it was 95. I can't remember. And I, walked into the coach's locker room, and there was a pair of, I don't even know what you call them, boots that were like the felt liner in it and the whole deal. And I went to Dwayne Mandrusak and said, "Dude, what is this?" And he goes, "You'll find." He said, "You'll find
out." That sounds like Sorrell's.
I remember it was about this time, and we used to practice. There was no indoor facility at Edmonton at the time, so we had to practice on that practice field up beyond Commonwealth. And I remember it being so freaking cold, and just thinking to myself, "Man, you got to really love football."
Coach, how much fun are you having watching Carson Wentz apply his trade?
You know what? The thing he did the other night when he got out of that pressure and scrambled around, for a 15-yard gain, he's a big man, Troy. That's not a little guy. That's not like, Doug Flutie back there and all of a sudden he disappeared. He is a big man, and he got out of trouble it was just almost indescribable. I thought, when I spent 3 days with them in training camp, I really thought that he had made a jump. And Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Eagles, actually played quarterback for us in NFL Europe. And so I was talking to him about him when I was there, and he said, he kind of smiled and grinned, and he goes, "Man, he can be a little hard-headed." He said, and I said, "But, man, oh, man, what a piece of clay to work with." And that is exactly what he is, phenomenal, and got great competitive spirit. And, makes all the plays, tough leadership. He's got all that stuff, and it's really fun to watch him grow.
He is fun. And being a, not real close, but from, playing from Fargo, he was there this offseason and brought in a ton of receivers. I was down there on a weekend in, like, May or June, and I asked somebody there, I go, "Does Carson Wentz still come back here?" And I go, "Come back here. He's actually got Alshon Jeffrey and all the guys here this week," and they were working out there, much like most quarterbacks do, Jeff. But most quarterbacks pick, like, Florida or California and say, "Will you come join me and work on some things for a week?" Not a lot of them do it in Fargo, North Dakota.
Well, he must have had to pay him a lot of money. it's amazing. I mean, the kid is really, he is that. Because when you watched him, he's kind of got, and again, I'm talking about you're around him on the field with him, see him get coached, see him interact with his teammates. He got a little bit of that aw shucks thing about him, that just Midwest, salt of the earth kid, and that's so rare in the National Football League, particularly at that position, where those guys are. The demands on his time and the attention he gets and all that, he seems to have weathered all that stuff and handles it really well.
Coach, what's your take on the Martavis Bryant situation in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think Bryant, first of all, the comments that he made publicly, those aren't, first of all, they don't help the Steelers, who are trying to win a championship. Second of all, you pin Mike Tomlin in the corner, and you pin the organization in the corner, and obviously their reaction to it was to put him on inactive, at least early this week, and demote him. Because I think they had to address it in some way. And, Mike said he had a lot of other fish to fry other than Martavis Bryant. But, again, it's not a great thing when you got one of your key players that's coming out and asking to be traded while you're in the second half of a season where you've got a chance, to win a Super Bowl. So you know, it's just a young player being a young player. And again, sometimes, you know, they're, you know, they don't realize the impact of some of the things they say.
Thursday nighter tonight is the Miami Dolphins 4-2 visiting the Baltimore Ravens 3-4. Are you more surprised that the Dolphins are 4-2, or are you more surprised that the Ravens are 3-4?
Well, I think I'm more surprised that the Dolphins, frankly, are 4-2. Not that they're 4-2, Jim. It's how they got to 4-2.
You know, right.
They're the only team in the National Football League that hasn't scored 100 points yet. I think they have 92 points, and you know, when you look at that, you say, how in the world can you get to 4-2? Well, they find a way, and that's, I think, you know, a positive, because the offense is, you know, the offense will get better. You know, they got too many good players to you know, play at that level, and I think Matt Moore gives them a little bit of a spark. I watched Baltimore in London, and, you know, right now they are so beat up. Their receivers are all hurt. You know, they lost Marshall Landa, their best offensive lineman. Flacco's coming off of a back injury that limited him in training camp, and he's really still not 100%. So, you know, they're a beat-up football team. And then on the other side of it, you know, they haven't been able to stop the run the last 3 weeks. People have just been gouging them with the run. So I'm sure you're going to see a ton of Jay Ajayi tonight by Miami.
Coach, are the Jacksonville Jaguars a starting quarterback away from being a remarkably strong Super Bowl contending team?
Well, I think right now they're a Super Bowl contending team, Troy, because the fact that when you look at that football team, and, you know, the thing that strikes you about them is they play great defense. I mean, they've only given up 110 points in, you know, 7 games. And, you know, they're a little inconsistent offensively. And I think Blake probably gets a little more criticism than he deserves. But, you know, they have the ability to run the ball for him. That's, you know, a real force. Even though he was out last week, they still, you know, managed to run the ball well, and I think that's going to be critical for him. But, you know, that's a good young football team, and, you know, as long as they don't get in situations where Bortles has to stand back and be in the pocket and throw it 20, 25 times to win, you know, in the drop-back game, if they can go play action, let him throw it quick, give him opportunities, he's going to see a lot of single outside because you've got to play 8-man box to try and stop that run. So, they're a good football team, and they're tough, and they're, you know, they're young, and they fly around, and I tell you what, defensively, they're on pace right now, guys, to set the all-time NFL record for sacks in a season. I think they're on pace for like 78, and I think the record's 72. You know, and you know, they even changed their Twitter handle at the in Jacksonville to Saxonville. That's how well that bunch up front's playing. So they're nasty. It's not a team I'd want to play.
Former CFL coach and NFL analyst for Sky Sports in the UK, Jeff Reimbold, joining us on the Big Show today, 42 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. What is wrong with the Falcons, Jeff? I know they lost their offensive coordinator, but the main pieces are still there, and the execution isn't there. I don't want to take anything away from their OC that's now in San Francisco, but to me it's not as difficult as they're making it out to be with the pieces they still have.
Well, you know what, to me, and again, this is just me, when your quarterback comes out this week and says, we don't need to look back to 2016, you know, we need to look at right now, that tells me that somebody or some people or even him are looking back to 2016 for answers. And the answers aren't going to come from last year's football team. You know, this is a team that right now is not playing nearly as well as they're capable of playing, because you guys are right. They do have basically all of the same pieces that they had last year. And again, I think I think it's a little bit of an overreaction to write them off right now because they are too talented. You look in that division that you're playing in and, you know, New Orleans is 4-2, but I think they're a little bit of an aberration. And I think Carolina 4-3, and then they're 3-3, right? Right there. So, you know, it's not time to panic, certainly, in Atlanta. But this is where, you know, and again, I always go back to Troy, and because he had the experience, this is where the noise from the outside can really, really be harmful to a football team. And how Dan Quinn messages to his guys about they've got to shut out all the noise. To talk about Kyle Shanahan, to talk about the collapse last year, to talk about giving up 17 a 17-point lead to the Dolphins earlier. They just got to focus on right now, today, how we prepare, how we practice. And that sounds cliche, but that's really the way it has to work, because otherwise you get involved in all these, you know, outside conversations that are doing absolutely no good in your preparation, in helping you prepare to win this week. Because, fellas, in the back half of this season, and we just saw this with Donta Hightower, just got, you know, tore a pec and he's out for the rest of the season. Well, again, an injury here, an injury there, and the entire, you know, dynamic can change. So you just got to, you know, put the blinders on, go back to work, and you know, work. And that's the only way that Atlanta's going to dig their way out of it.
Coach, a lot of people had the Kansas City Chiefs defense being considerably stronger than it is right now. They're 28th in the league in pass defense. Can that be boiled down to simply the loss of Eric Berry?
Well, it's part of it, Troy. And I think that, you know, you can't overestimate the impact he had at safety, because he's one of the really rare ones that can play in the box, blitz, cover guys in the slot, all those things. He really is a great, great player. So obviously that's going to, you can't replace a guy like that. But I think you look at the Oakland game and they gave up 30 some first downs and I think it was 500 yards offense against the Raiders. But some of the balls that Derek Carr threw were just, I mean, incredible throws. He put them in a tiny, tiny windows. And I think what you got to really be cautious of is overreacting to that kind of a day by. I mean, they're pros. They, you know, Derek Carr is getting paid too. I mean, he's a first round draft choice, and he made some unbelievable throws. I think the Chiefs, if I'm honest about the Chiefs, I think the area that concerns me a little bit about the Chiefs is the linebacker play. I don't, you know, again, I don't know if they have elite level linebackers, but, you know, they've got Justin Houston. They can rush the passer a little bit. And, you know, Peters at corner gives you a shutdown guy. And it's just, they just got to, you know, and it, again, it sounds trite and it sounds cliche, but they just got to keep grinding. Bobby Sutton does a good job. They're not getting the turnovers that they used to get or that they got last year. And I think that's the biggest, you know, difference right now with the Chiefs. And again, you just got to keep working at it.
Jeff, we got to go, but right before we do, it's week 8. Who's the best team in the NFL right now in your mind?
Well, you know, that's a really tough one, but I still say the Chiefs are probably the best team right now. Even though they've lost two, I think that they're the most balanced team. You know, New England's starting to come a little bit, but then they lose Hightower. And then Philadelphia, you got to look at Philadelphia. But, again, you talk about Philadelphia, and they just lost starting middle linebacker to Achilles tendon. And the best left tackle, maybe the best left tackle in football, you know, in Peters this past weekend. So they're going to lose, you know, that's a big chunk. It's going to be tough for them to mask those kind of injuries. That's why it's, you know, this thing is so, so tough to call, because there's so much football left to play. And then the team I like is on the come. You look out west and you look at that Rams team and you go, why not the Rams? Because they are talented and they are young and they are hungry and they got a great – I spent 20 minutes with Sean McVay last week in London, and I'm going to tell you about it. You talk about an impressive young guy. Wow.
Excellent stuff, Jeff. Always appreciate your time and great talking to you.
All right, fellas.
Awesome stuff, Coach. Mahalo, man.
We'll take a break on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Come back and tee up the phone lines to get your calls at 9 on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You wanted it back, we cave. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Each come with either a $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Both have a pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Both have a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. And both caves come with a Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. The Man Cave has two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place. The Mam Cave has two tickets to see Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place. You can choose your cave of choice.
choose your cave rather, online at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. This is the big show on TSN 1290. It's live from the Royal Sports Studio at 1445 Pembina Highway, and it is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight. We'll get into the lineup momentarily, but Nick Petan gets sent down. Matt Hendricks gets activated off the IR. Your thoughts?
Well, I understand the thought process of when you have a young player and you want them, or you sense that they need an opportunity to grow as a player, you send them down to the A and you let them ripen. I understand that completely. I don't understand when you are trying to win with your big club and you send that player down when that player gives you the better chance to win than with what you're making the decision to go forward with on your third line. To me, there's no way in the world, for instance, with who the Jets could have put on their third line in the upcoming games here, starting tonight, Tanev, Kopp, and Mathias, I don't see that helping you win. In that situation, I think Petan, Kopp, Armia is a much better alternative as a third line. So I'm really perplexed by this decision with what is absolutely two fourth lines and maybe two struggling fourth lines at best right now that composes the bottom six for the Winnipeg Jets. And just quite frankly, I don't see how you survive three games in the next 4 days, two of them being against Pittsburgh and one of them being against Columbus with a lineup like this.
And this grand experiment was put together with the key focus being this will help our penalty kill. We'll have penalty killers and role players in our bottom six, and that'll help us moving forward. And the penalty kill has been atrocious, and it's killing you 5-on-5 as well. So to me, with the Petan thing, there's almost two separate issues I look at. I don't know if you can make a strong argument to me that Nick Petan should be a stone-cold lock in the top 12 because he hasn't jumped off the page and he hasn't done a whole lot either. But you also can't look at that third line, like you mentioned, with Tanev and Mathias on the wing there and say, yeah, playing those guys 13 minutes a night is going to help our hockey club win games. It won't. And they're going to have to – Paul Maurice is going to have to look at that third line, no matter who's at center, whether it's Lowry or Kopp, and he's going to have to put some more offensive-minded players on the wing there because they're not going to be able – to go up against the Pittsburghs of the world, and we saw what happened against Columbus a few nights ago when the Jackets just kind of skated roughshod over the Jets.
I don't have a problem with the Petan move. I think he needs to play, and I agree with you. I don't think he or a lot of the guys, six or seven of them, have done anything to stand out. Matt Hendricks I'll reserve judgment on because I literally haven't seen him play this year, but I understand the fever around him. And the line up for tonight, as of yesterday's practice, Scheifele, Connor with Wheeler, Little with Ehlers and Laine, Kopp, Mathias, and Tanev, Hendricks, Lemieux, and Armia. Brendan Lemieux on 9 minutes of ice time earns a second game. Your thoughts on the lineup, the moves, who wins tonight as the Jets get back at it after 6 days off to take on the Pens. We also talk Bombers today and an epic Game 2 of the World Series. Anything and everything coming up on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the fan line at TSN 1290, 780-1290. Your call's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 1290-90. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you On the Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, the afternoon ride with Rick and Husser at 3. It'll go till 5, and that's because of the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends will go from 5 till 6. Puck drop live from Pittsburgh between the Penguins and the Jets. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns on the call at 6 o'clock right here on TSN 1290, and the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you. Boston Pizza Fan Line will be open on the postgame show. The Boston Pizza Fan Line is open right now at 780-1290, taking your calls on the Jets, their lineup, the demotion of Nick Petan. What do you think of the game tonight? We also talk Bombers, some of their injuries. Do you think that will affect them this Saturday, and if so, how much? And an epic Game 2 of the World Series last night. Literally had me with a defibrillator real close, just in case. The Astros tie the series with a World Series record, 8 home runs between the Astros and Dodgers. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Sandy, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Okay, I had a few thoughts. Like, you know how they sent down Petan? I understand that that was probably what they had to do because of they don't want to lose anybody off waivers. I get that. But I remember, and I think they like him because Paul Maurice was saying that they really wanted to give Petan a fair shake. That's why they took him off center and had him play the wing. But then I was also thinking, you know, like with regards to when Adam Lowry comes back, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because if Lemieux plays really good, what are they going to do? I'm kind of wondering if there's a trade in the works maybe for Dano and they're just biding time.
Yeah, Sandy, it's real interesting, and we actually, just during the commercial break, I was saying I'm very interested to see this lineup now that Kyle Connor's here and producing when Matthew Perreault draws back in too. But you bring up a great point of Adam Lowry. You know, Nick Petan at the center position was put on wing just because he wasn't going to beat out Shifley, Lowry, or Brian Little. I think Nick Petan still has a future with this team. And I think that, as you pointed out, because of, you know, the waivers and everything else was one of the reasons. But as we've talked about this morning, not just Petan, but a number of these guys haven't done enough to sort of solidify a position there. So
I agree.
I'll hearken back to Coach Maurice's comments yesterday when he's asked what he wanted to see from the bottom six, and he said the usual grit, speed, all that stuff. But then he threw in that little snipe about and feel free to score at any time.
Yeah,
like it's we can debate at length Maurice's philosophy and the kind of players he likes and doesn't like. But to me, the overriding thing of this bottom six is nobody's really stepped forward with it.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there, Sandy, and intriguing for sure. Possibly with a trade with Dano. I don't know what you'd get back, but maybe to jumpstart the two involved in the trade, maybe. But and also thinking about what you're saying when Lowry comes back, pair that with when Perreault comes back, and all of a sudden that third line that right now is Tanevkot, Mathias possibly turns into Perreault, Lowry, Armia, and then that becomes a legitimate third line.
The thing, I don't like Tanev on the third line, and I was also thinking with Pullman. Pullman's still in, correct?
No, he's not dressing tonight. Kulikov is back, so Sherratt and Pullman look to be the extra ones. And,
but they're
and
still up with the club, right?
They're still with the team, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why I think Pullman's still up with the club is because I'm wondering if they're concerned for Toby Enstrom's safety playing, like, Pittsburgh. Because, well, you know, the issues last year.
Yeah,
I know.
Ryan Reeves, Columbus.
Ryan Reeves keeps picking on him all the time, doesn't he?
Yeah. We talked about that off air.
Yeah.
Right?
I've been informed Ryan Reeves had a flu the last time that played the Jets, so he's maybe a little bit under the weather, and he's all snarly and ready to go tonight.
You would think Enstrom would have the Ryan Reeves flu, like that kind of, right? Like the old Philly flu?
24-hour Palomino flu? Yeah.
Well, and say Lowry comes back next week. Is it Pullman the odd man out? I would think so because he needs to play games. I would like to see him start playing.
You're not going to lose Sherratt via waivers, right?
So I think the waivers at this point of the season sort of weigh into it. Thanks for the call, Sandy. We appreciate it. 780-1290 if anybody else wants to weigh in on the conversation we're having. And I'd love to get your thoughts on Nick Petan going to the Moose. Hendricks comes in.
Enstrom waking up this... I'm feeling so good today, Coach.
Do you think Reeves will pin him against the boards and then walk away going game, blouses, like he did against Ken?
And then, of course, it buffs out there with Toby. Right, then you got the Reeves buff thing going on. Could smell it from a mile away, can't you?
And, you know, this discussion goes back to when Claude Noel was here, and I was asking him about Toby Entram, and he said, and actually it was Paul Postma at the time, too, and he was going on and on about Postma, and he said he just has, you know, we like him because offensively he can do things that a lot of defensemen can't. And then I was asking about Toby, and he goes, what's your concern with Toby? And I said, well, if you ever get into the playoffs, I put 39 on the board and circle it. And if I'm the opposing coach and say, make life miserable for this guy.
That's what Noel said,
I do that in the regular season if I'm coaching against us. But again, Toby brings some other attributes that we like. But it is a concern against some bigger teams.
He's a little fella. And to me, you know, he's lost it a little bit here in the last year or so. But for him to last, as if you've ever been around him, for him to last as long as he has in the NHL, the level of brilliance involved with that, with how small he is just mind-blowing. And I tip my hat to Toby Enstrom.
780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation. And as we said, the lines from yesterday's practice, and of course Kevin Olszewski on the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. today, will have the latest from the morning skate, which should be getting underway here momentarily. Down in Pittsburgh. But yesterday, it was Mark Scheifele centering Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler, Brian Little between Ehlers and Laine, Andrew Kopp between Tanev and Mathias, and Matt Hendricks making his Jets debut again with Lemieux and Armia. The defense pairings are Morrissey Trouba, Enstrom Bufflin, Kulikov back healthy with Myers, and Connor Hellebuck in net. The power play yesterday, gentlemen, looked like this. Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler with Laine and Bufflin. Ehlers, Little, Lemieux with Morrissey and Myers.
I think of all the things that bother me with this team, the fact that we still see Nikolaj Ehlers on the second team, that really bugs the hell out of me. And with Connor up there, like, for Pete's sake, there's nothing wrong at all with your second team having Connor, Little, Lemieux, Morrissey, and Myers, and you go out there and you do what you can with the additional man. But when you get out there and flex your power play on an opposing team, to not have Nikolaj Ehlers, who is your best playmaker, the best guy at zone entries, all those sorts of things, man, it is absolutely senseless to me. I don't understand it whatsoever. All the elite power play units in the team put their best guys up there. And, like, for instance, tonight, get ready on the first, when Malkin, Kessel, Letang, Crosby are on with Hornquist, and see what happens tonight. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. Put your best guy, your best playmaker, best zone entry guy up on that first power play team for the love of Joe Daly.
Joe Daly.
I didn't see that one coming, but no. it would be similar to Kessel being on the second unit for Pittsburgh, right? Where, yes, Pittsburgh would look at that and go, look, we got Crosby, Malkin, Letang.
Or Malkin, Crosby. Put one of those guys,
you know,
on
what
the
I mean?
Second.
Like, they load up heavy and they say, enjoy killing off 90 seconds of this, yeah, if you can make it to 90 seconds. So I get what you're saying. It does make sense to me. And you can let Kyle Connor have a role in that second unit, right? But you want to put, you want to give your team the best shot with your five best guys. And I think it's fair to say that Nikolaj Ehlers over Kyle Connor, Ehlers gives you your power play the best chance to succeed there.
That top power play should be Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, and then we can start a debate. There's no question those three cats should be on the top one.
You don't like Wheeler on the top power play?
Well, you know the way, I don't like the way Paul Maurice manages the penalty kill. To me, I'd be utilizing Blake Wheeler much more so on the penalty kill, a lot of the teams do that have the good power, the penalty killers as well. It's like changing the system, but then also utilizing the guys out there that can wheel around a little bit and that have that extra little touch of hockey sense and smart stick and all the rest of it. So I would have no problem whatsoever on having, you know, I don't mind Wheeler being on the top. But I just don't see it as a must. It's a must to me to have Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine. And then you can start to put pieces in and out as you see fit.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation. I love Wheeler on that power play, and I love the way he feeds Laine on it. Like,
yeah,
through traffic and lanes.
Have, both. Yeah. Have Wheeler and Ehlers. Like,
no question.
You don't need to get rid of both of those guys. Yep. The Jets can load up that power play. They've just chosen not to do so far.
What do you guys think of Brendan Lemieux being on the second power play in his second NHL game?
You're trying to set fire or help the guy, put him in a better position. I'm not real sure what I think about that. As opposed to, for instance, I would rather see Armia there. We've seen Armia and some levels of offensive brilliance mostly last year, but it's there. So why not feed the machine of Armia a little bit with that second team power play opportunity more so than putting Brendan Lemieux there? Now I understand what he's trying to do here with Lemieux, but to me the Armia thing right now is a guy. Brendan Lemieux with this team on the fourth line is the way it's going to play out, and that's probably where it should be. Joel Armia, there's still upside and ceiling that you want to try and tap into, and you've tried to extract or get a guy in a role and get him going. Wouldn't you put Joel Armia there?
Yeah, I mean, it is between Lemieux and Armia when you look at who else could fit in there. So that's the argument we'd be having. And yeah, I think Armia has better hands than Lemieux. And he's still a big body, right? Like he's 6'3", so you're not losing size in front of the net there. I don't think it's a major, major deal, but doesn't it kind of point to Paul Maurice's old school thinking where you get a big, strong guy in front of the net and let him create chaos and try and battle instead of having more of a skilled guy in and around there, and he can try and work the deflection. We've seen Armia make, you know, a couple nice deflections last season for sure. So I would go with Armia for sure, but is it going to change the way this game goes? No, I don't really think so.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can also text us your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Your call's next on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Pens tonight, 6 o'clock on TSN 1290. This is The Big Show live from the Royal Sports Studio. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Ian, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just had a couple comments on the power play things. You guys were discussing personnel on the power plays, and I'll start with Lemieux versus Armia on the second unit. I think the reasoning behind that is where I know it makes sense that Armia has a certain level of skill or maybe some polish that Lemieux might not have, but I think for the role that Lemieux is going to play on that power play, be the guy in front of the net, I think he has more of what it takes than Armia. He has a willingness to stand in front of the net and do battle and the grit to pick up every loose puck, to be there for every tip, to stand there in front of Buff and Lion-A firing bombs at him. Well, he wouldn't have Lion-A on that second unit, but I think it's the willingness to compete standing right in front of the net that is why he's there and not somebody like Armia. Any thoughts on that?
I'd like to... Well, my thought on that would be that if you look at Pittsburgh's power play tonight, Hornquist will be in that spot, right? Like, I don't know. Do you need to surrender yourself? And you can have intelligent shots from the point instead of eye-high type of blast from Buff as we've seen in the past and be off to the side or create things in the front. To me, what's even more important than simply screening the goalie on that if they go the 1-3-1 type of a situation is that whole draw a circle around that net, right, and use a radius of however much you think makes sense. Who would be best and most nifty at picking up the puck in those situations and being able to dish it off real quick for a good scoring opportunity or getting a greasy goal in front like that? Like, that's equally or maybe even more important to me than standing in front and, you know, maybe being subjected to shots that aren't real intelligent coming in from the point at a certain level there. But I would just I think Armia's completely would be up for that. I don't see the – I think you got to utilize the skill more so.
I see what you're saying, but I think that Lemieux is more akin to Hornquist as the example you gave
fair.
In terms of their style. Mm-hmm. Hornquist is one of the toughest guys in the league. I know he's not a North American – Western Canadian, but Hornquist tough as hell.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think that's the same reason they have Lowry out there. I mean, we've talked about this before, like putting Wheeler in front of the net and stuff. I don't want Wheeler in front of the net. I like him where he is.
Hornquist also scored 30 goals in the NHL multiple times. So to kind of use the – I think the Hornquist-Lemieux comparison is a little bit foolish, to be honest.
Like, and he's a veteran who has played number one line over his career.
Yeah, I don't think that's – I get what you're saying playing style-wise, but it would be more like taking Armia's skill and putting it in Lemieux's body sort of thing, if that's kind of what you're getting at.
Anything else, Ian? All right, we'll move on. Thanks for the call and the opinion. 780-1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. On the fan line, 780-1290. Al, you're on the program. Go ahead, Al. Hi, Al. No, Al? All right, try again, Al. We'll
go. You know the one thing, too, that, like, just in what was being said there, is that sort of the old, like, what the Jets would do forever when their power play was brutal is feed the point for the big blast coming in from the point. That's really not what they try and attempt now on their power play, right? It's way more about puck movement. When you get Wheeler on the right, well, bam, over the line, like that whole thing, that's the guy in front doesn't really play a similar role as to when you're just emphasizing the blast
like
from the point.
Like the old Thomas
sort of
Holmstrom kind of guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. So which is why that extra little serving of nifty comes in much more handy than standing there like a punching bag and waiting for the puck blasting in at you.
But I think that role has developed into being the gritty guy to get the rebound, to sort of screen the goalie. So even if it's coming from line A, like they want that big body taking up space in front of the goalie.
But that space, dude, the goalie isn't there. Right, that's the thing with the passing and the puck movement. You start bringing shots in from the edges there on that 1-3-1. The goalie isn't there at the time. The goalie's sliding across and everything else. So there's disruption in front for sure. But yeah. Again, like to me, it's more about the rebound if it's there. If the goalie happens to make the save, like those shots aren't coming in from a screen because of the quick passing plays.
To the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Bryce, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good.
Perfect. So last week I called you guys and I asked if you guys think that Paul Maurice might be the worst coach in the NHL. And looking at what he does with his power play, still seeing that he has two defensemen on his second power play unit, basically gift-wrapping a roster spot to Brandon Lemieux, who... Yeah, I guess he played all right, but I think he just loves those guys who just hit bodies and don't really control the puck much. I like Brandon Lemieux. I'm just saying I think he's gift wrapping that position to him, especially on that second power play unit. But he's got two defenses still on a second power play unit, which is absolutely archaic. I think you need another shooter up there or something. Like, I don't know why this argument is either having Brandon Lemieux or Joel Armia. I think we could probably have both. And just that third line, like that, is that not the worst third line in the entire league right now?
Brian Mile it is, yep.
Bryce, you know who else has two defensemen on their second power play unit is the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight.
You know, I there's a lot of teams that have
two
defensemen on the second power play unit. I get what you're saying, that the two defensemen as a top power play unit is archaic, but I don't think it's... If you look around the league, there's just not a lot of teams that can roll four forwards, 1D on both units.
Yeah. All right, Bryce. Sorry, we got to take a break. We'll take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, when we return to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on the Big Show and TSN 1290. Jets and Pens tonight at 6, the first of 3 in 4 days. They'll host the Penguins again Sunday night at Bell MTS Place, but they'll visit the Columbus Blue Jackets tomorrow night before returning home on Saturday. We have the game for you at 6 with Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns, and we have you on the Boss Pizza fan line right now, 780-1290 on the Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Brent, go ahead. Hi, Brent.
How's it going? Hello.
How are you?
Living the dream. Just a quick question. I have a question and a comment. My question is, I didn't see the last Jets game. Did Kyle Connor get any power play time?
He's on the number one power play unit for tonight. And I think he was last game, too, was he not? He got power play time last game, I know that.
What I'd like to see is... utilize him just like they use line A, but a threat from the other side. He's got a wicked shot, too. Not like line A's, but I think he's better from, like, the face-off dot down towards the goal line. he's just a wicked threat there, and then the Shifley busting through the middle. I think that they could be, if they get their act together, I think they could be a pretty dangerous setup. And the 2D on the second power play unit is not archaic. It's because when the penalty ends, then you have two defensemen on the ice. At least that's what I would do. If I was coaching, I would want 2D on there when the penalty ends. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Brent. Yeah, we pointed that out. There's a lot of teams that do that, including the Penguins tonight will be doing that on their second power play unit. Your thoughts on Connor on the power play and where to put him?
Well, it should be on the second team power play. Nikolaj Ehlers should be in the spot where Kyle Connor will be perched tonight.
Yeah, that's where I would have him too. Just load up that number one unit, let them run. Give him 90 seconds, and then kind of like Brent alluded to there, get that second unit just kind of the mop-up time and have two defensemen on the ice and ready to go.
Thanks for the call, Brent, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Dave, you're on the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Anytime. Thanks for calling.
I want to weigh on this power play thing since everyone else is.
We just need to turn your radio down, Dave.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
The first power play, I really like Buff in front of the net. I agree with Troy about Buff's shot at the point. It's pretty wild and up high all the time, and I think he'd be great down in front of the net because you lose the puck down low. He's great along the boards and getting the puck back, so it'd be Buff in front, Laine and Ehlers, Shifley, and I like Trouba at the point. He's pretty smart with the puck, and his shot's a little bit lower. And, you know, second power play, I like Little Wheeler, Connor, and when Crow's healthy, Crow there with either Myers or Morrissey at the point. Morrissey's really smart with the puck as well. But since Crow's hurt, I would go with Little Wheeler, Connor, Myers, and Morrissey on the second power play.
So who's on your first? Sorry, if Little Wheeler, Laine. Sorry, who's on your first power play?
First one's Buff in front of the net. The net, Laine, Ehlers, Shifley, and Trouba.
I agree 100% with that, man. That's exactly what I would have.
Yeah, and the second one, Little Wheeler, Connor. Connor's nifty with the puck as well. Crow, when he's healthy, with Morrissey or Myers at the back. But since Crow's out, Myers and Morrissey right now at the back.
Yeah, Trouba has gotten power play time, and I've made mention of this all season long. I'm a little surprised that Tyler Myers is power play time, but I don't mind him there. Like, he can move the puck back and forth on the blue line and has the reach. I just thought they would primarily be using him penalty kill, but Trouba has gotten power play time this year, but he's not, as of practice yesterday, on either of the ones heading into tonight.
I like the way Trouba brings the puck up a little bit better in Buff, too. Typically, he brings it up quicker, and, of course, you know, for the most part, those the first guy bringing it up just dumps it off to who should be Ehlers, off to whichever side, and Shifley on the other, however they'll work that. But I've thought all along it should be, if you go 1-3-1, Buff, Laine, Shifley, Ehlers with Trouba at the back.
Thanks for the call, Dave. We appreciate it. And all the calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Penguins tonight at 6 on the station, live from Pittsburgh, TSN 1290. This is The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon, live from the Royal Sports Studio. Who's next on the Boss Pizza fan line?
We'll get Dave to hold on, but we'll go to Robert.
Robert, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi there, guys.
Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, with the second half of the back-to-back coming up here, and they're going to put Steve Mason in again, eh? I was wondering, like, if he gets lit up again, like for 5 or 6 goals, it's going to be to the point of, what do you do already? Like, it's going to be, you don't want to put this guy in net anymore. If he's looking at 0-4 and a goals against of 5 or 6.
Well, looking at the schedule, if that happens, I would go with Connor Hellebuck for a long time.
Yeah.
And that being said, I don't really fault Steve Mason, but the bottom line is you need wins. So if they go Hellebuck tonight, Mason tomorrow, and the same thing happens to Mason that's happened in his 3 previous starts, you have Pittsburgh Sunday, you go to Minnesota Tuesday, And then you go into November where you're back here on Thursday for Dallas, Saturday against Montreal, and Monday against Dallas. If that happens, as we're hypothetically talking, I ride Hellebuyck a lot during that stretch.
Yeah, could be looking at where it's like you call up Hutch already or something, or I don't know.
I don't. To me, it completely depends on, like, you just can't look, even with the how horrible the numbers look for Steve Mason. The number of games, it's pretty easy to go back and forensically break down the goals scored against him. Those first three goals against Columbus, he had zero chance. Any one of those he makes a save, they would have been highlight reels. The fourth was a decent goal. The fifth he should have had. Right, the fourth idea you'd like to see him make it, and the fifth he should have stopped. But I still will maintain here and will say as loudly and as often as I need to, Steve Mason has not played poorly up to this point in time as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Hope he doesn't get lit up again in Columbus there.
Yeah, I agree.
It'd be atrocious.
Yeah, you'd start to wonder at some point how much can he endure, but you hope that doesn't transpire, that's for sure.
If he plays as well as he has and still, like, that outcome happens, given the defensive front in front of him, I don't blame him for that, but I go with the guy who, especially with some nights off in between games, I just go with the guy who's playing well. They need wins. All right, Robert. Thanks for the call on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead, Dave.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Two things. I guess we're all salivating about this Jets game tonight. Seeing as it's been 5 or 6 days.
More shaking than salivating.
What's that?
I'm more shaking than salivating.
Oh, come on. You got to go in there and you got to dive in head first.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I want to see this. I want to see what happens after a couple of days of practice.
It could be a chippy one, though. I think it could be a chippy one. That could very much transpire with the recent history of these two teams, right? But Nick Letang is an NHL player now, is he not? Pretty much.
I don't know about that.
No?
No. I think...
Package him up and move him and look for a bona fide third liner. I mean...
It would have to be a heck of a package deal to accomplish that, though, no?
Is that right? Yeah.
I kind of get what Dave's saying. Like, it's getting to that point where if you're not going to play all these youngsters and you need to get into the playoffs, this is your playoff year.
Like trade Patan, Dano, point, and whatever, a pick or something no, for...
Yeah, like I don't know what... And I don't think you would package all of them together, right? But if there's a team out there with a guy who's maybe 5, 6 years older and he's willing to contribute now, maybe I think it's going to be at that point pretty close here where you have to look at moving one of your young guys for somebody more established and who can help you right now in that top nine.
And there's no doubt that the depth will continue to be tested, right? And there's no way they escape the remainder of the season without some more injury problems and hurdles and all the rest of it. So the depth is absolutely paramount. I agree with you there.
And I said this during the summer, regardless of whether it's Pretend or who, I'm all for some deals. I think you finally solidified this team that it is a playoff team, so go get some pieces to augment that and deal some of your prospects that you've been hanging on to. So if there is a deal out there, I'm all for it. But you bring up a great point, Dave. Like, let's look at Nick Petan that way. If you're an opposing GM, do you want him and what would you pay for him?
Yeah.
Like right now, what would you – if you're an opposing GM, do you want Nick Petan and what would you –
have to be packaged up.
What would you be willing to give for him?
Well, you'd have to package him up with something else. Him alone and even a pick wouldn't be enough. Like, say, if you wanted a third-line center, it wouldn't be enough. So, but the Jets are deep in prospects right now. They are. So I think it might be time to, you know, if not now, by Christmas or something, consider that.
Are they? Are we? Are the Jets deep in prospects right now?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think they're deep enough to give away some picks that they covet and I don't know if they're deep enough to send both picks and prospects.
I mean, I don't think they're deep at all right now. They ain't deep at all right now.
They're just kind of middle of the pack. Like, their prospects have graduated already to the big, so they're kind of like I get what you're saying, right?
They are deep with prospects. They're not deep with NHL players.
Who are they? Who's the prospects? Tell me. Give me the three top prospects.
Roslovic.
Yeah.
Would you consider Pullman a prospect?
Not defensive.
Okay, Comrie.
Not defensive. Or yeah, just forward.
Just offensive?
Sorry,
just offensive? Then, I mean, you look at Roslovic, Spacek, Harkins.
Spacek is definitely a prospect.
You start pulling the emergency brake in a hurry. I'm looking at our bottom six. Don't tell me the Winnipeg Jets are deep.
Well, they have Lapon, Harkins. Spacek, I think, is going to play in the show one day. I think Roslovic is. That's four right there. You got Patan down there now, so that's five. I think they're deeper than they've been. I don't think they're deep enough to deal prospects and picks. I think they're deep enough to deal one or the other. I don't think they need as many draft picks as they've needed in the past. So if you want to send a prospect and keep your pick, or you want to send two picks and keep a prospect, I get that. I don't know if they're deep enough to do both.
If this is a deep pool of prospects, I don't need to know how to swim to jump into it and survive.
Well, where are you playing all these prospects then?
I'm just saying. I don't believe it. The Jets have a lot of young talent that right now are with the team and contributing. I don't think right now you can look at the situation with the Manitoba Moose and say the Jets are deep in prospects right now.
I think they're deep in prospects. I don't think they're deep in NHL players. And what I mean by that is they are deep. If Perreault's healthy and Lowry's healthy, they have a ton of prospects. If those guys go down, they still have prospects, but they don't have NHL players, and I think that's the difference. They don't have guys you can slug in. If four guys get injured on this team, you don't have a lot of NHL-ready players coming into your lineup. You have a bunch of prospects coming into your lineup.
J.C. Lapon is not a NHL prospect. Like, to me, he's not. Anyway, he's not going to get me excited. I love his play.
I think organizational depth maybe is kind of maybe the most apt term, right? Like, there's not a lot of NHL. Like, when Pittsburgh has somebody go down a year or two ago, it's, well, let's give Sherry and Gensel a try, and all of a sudden it's stick and stay for the remainder here. And, you know, I kind of look at a team like Vegas, if you're thinking about maybe making a trade, and there's a team that would be looking to build up their young NHLers or young prospect depth, and maybe later in the season that's something that could be looked at in, you know, a little bit more.
You know what? That just struck me. If you're trying to improve your third line, would you deal Patan and a pick for Leipzig? Who's playing third line in Vegas now? Those are the kind of Winnipeg angle, of course. Well, not just because he's from Winnipeg, but I thought, you know, Toronto was too deep for him to crack the lineup. Vegas, he's in the lineup and contributing. Like, that's if you're looking to improve your third line and have a guy who's actually ready.
Well, I wonder if they, I don't know, you give away Leipzig if you're the Knights, man.
Yeah, that's probably someone they would want to hold on to.
Yeah, McPhee might flip you the bird.
But if you want to do what the Jets have done with prospects, that's what they would want. So you put in a pick, maybe a high pick and a low pick, and throw in Patan, and you go get a third liner that you're going to benefit in a deal like that because you're going to play him now.
And I don't know if he's established enough, right?
Vegas is going to benefit because they'll have what they need is picks.
I think the Jets would want something more for sure. Then bringing Leipzig here as your third line. Like, you need a third line solid contributor.
Like a David Perron, maybe, who's a UFA at the end of this season.
Yeah, they need a for sure. It can't be a roll of the dice at all.
I mean, and you can't just look at the Moose. Like, there's a first-round pick last year that the Jets have.
Yeah, the finish.
What's
Veselainen.
There's other picks that aren't in the Moose right now that they have prospects for. My concern is when you start dealing those they don't have NHL-ready guys. So, to my point, when Perreault and Lowry and, heaven forbid, say somebody in the top six goes down, you don't have NHL guys ready. But you do have prospects, I think, and more so than we've ever seen. Thanks for the call, Dave. Look at what you did. You started a whole discussion. Thanks for the call. More of your calls coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show, live from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, the ready-to-move specialist. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. A couple breaking news things coming out just momentarily again. First and foremost, the Grey Cup in Ottawa is now officially sold out. Joe Girardi and the Yankees.
We'll see what those tickets are selling for when it's Saskatchewan against Winnipeg.
Or Toronto versus...
Oh, no, it'll, that's good if it's Toronto.
No, it's not.
If it's an all-West thing, you got trouble.
Joe Girardi will not be back as Yankees manager after 10 seasons. That's just coming out from the New York Times. Joe Girardi not back. He's done after 10 years as skip of the New York Yankees.
That sucks, ducks.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. That's what happens when you don't beat the Astros, man. Dave Roberts, watch out for your job. Jets and Pens tonight. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Paulie, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, Transcall Paul. I usually call in the afternoon. I'm not the big morning guy. I've been ducking Troy ever since his band days at Wise Guys.
Come on, man.
I hear a lot of people in Transcona aren't morning people, and I dig it.
If it's involving coming home, then we might be.
What do you got for us?
Fair share out in
you know, I'm going to be one of the few guys being in that school and part of that bully union. And, you know, this city's got to quit throwing guys under the bus. I mean, maybe they want to get Pavlik back. They're already reaching back down in the minors for Hutchinson. You know, Mason has played three games. The first two games, everybody crapped the bed, including him. The third game, you know, Mason was starting to stand on his head there. Yep. He got thrown under the bus.
Yep.
Now, you know, I don't think they should be riding Hellebuck quite yet. You know, the Jets are going to need Mason somewhere throughout the season. If they don't get him going a wee bit now and start getting him some games so his game can come around better than it's been, then they will be looking for another goalie when Hellebuck starts to struggle. They have to get him in somewhere in these next few games. Yes, he needs a win. Yes, he needs to play better. But to be looking to the minors, it's a little ridiculous.
I agree with you. I ride the hot hand after this weekend and whoever's playing the best because they need wins each and every night. But I totally agree with you that Steve Mason is an integral part to this season and will be going forward.
And we rocked the socks off of many for many years across this city, man, at the
you go to
all
Spike?
The cover bands. Huh?
You go to the Spike?
Did I go to the Spike?
Yeah, do you play the Spike? Do you ever go there?
I don't think it existed when we're back in our heyday of covering all the cover music stuff, man.
I still don't trust you since when you announced last week you've never been to a party. You don't go to a party.
Well, if you're not partying, are you at a party?
For sure.
When I go to I may well have been at parties. I'm not a partier, so I'm not at a party really, right?
So you don't go to a house party and lean against the wall and say 17 years in the CFL.
If I'm dragged to a house party, like for what, watching Grey Cup or Super Bowl, I hate those things. I'm not there to socialize. I want to watch the game.
Somebody says, what time is it? And you give them the old, well, let me check my watch.
Yeah, no, because I'm yawning when it's 8 o'clock at night. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. What kind of parties can we go to? You got anything cooking in the morning right after the show? That's when I'm at my best, man, not at 9 at night.
You want to go party after the show? I'll party. Thanks for the call, Paulie. Jack, you're on the program. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, hi, guys. I agree with moving Patan because I don't think he fits here. But you guys picked the wrong Winnipegger to be going after the Vegas Knights. I would be going after Cody Eakin.
Fair point.
I think he'd be the perfect third line center here.
And you know what? And take Winnipeg out of it. I don't get guys just to play in their hometown. I get guys that you need. And Brandon brought up the great point of David Perron. Like, David Perron is not in the future of the Vegas Golden Knights. David Perron would be a very solid third liner on this team, I believe.
And Cody Eakin might be.
Cody Eakin even better
for Vegas, though. Like, yeah, I don't know if Vegas. He's such a good kid. Like when you want to talk about bringing in character guys,
yeah.
Like just a real genuinely nice kid. But
so
I don't think
instead
Vegas,
of trading for him, we could go kidnap him.
It's very.
Is it a kidnapping situation if a Manitoban goes?
I might have some insight on this. I hear that his father and maybe a couple of his buddies, Scott Nealis, are very excited to go watch games in Vegas.
Hey,
so that the family might kibosh any move out of Vegas at least for two seasons with Cody Eakin. Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Afternoon ride, 3 till 5 with Huss and Rick Ralph. Kevin Olszewski in the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, 5 till 6. Puck drop, Jets, Penguins, TSN 1290 with Edmonds and Munns, and then Olszewski and friends have the Huron Windows post-game show. Thank you for listening, and for doing so, we have a pair of tickets to the Bombers versus the Lions this Saturday, October 28th, 780-1290, and we also have a pair of tickets to Leonard Kenny, who is coming to the Burton Cummings Theater. Leonard Kenny, Burton Cummings Theater.
And Brandon Ruwicki has won those tickets.
And he will be rocking in tarps off. Tarp off.
You got to go tarps off to this side.
Yeah, with Riley and Jonesy in the building. I mean, come on.
13th caller through gets those. We'll break it all down for you tomorrow and look for more of your calls on what transpires tonight between the Jets and the Penguins on TSN 1290. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. And the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca.